Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the fifth and final hearing of the New York City Broadband Advisory Committee. My name is David Birdsell. I'm a committee member and the Dean of the School of Public Affairs. I'll be chairing this committee hearing today on behalf of Committee Chair Sean Bell, who sits to my right. I'd like to begin by introducing our host for today's event. We're very grateful for the College of Staten Island for this wonderful facility, which we're going to occupy for a good portion of the day, and it is my great pleasure to introduce President Tomas Morales.
Thank you. I'd first like to thank Councilwoman Brewer and welcome all of you to the College of Staten Island. We at the College are very honored that you've chosen our campus for this important city council hearing. The College of Staten Island is also an appropriate venue. If you look at the map of Staten Island, you'll see that CSI is very near the physical center of the borough. Our centrality is more than a geographical oddity. It is also a metaphor for our school. With nearly 13,000 students, 2,000 employees, students ranging from doctoral candidates to baccalaureate, master's, and even associate degree, our faculty is second to none, and our facilities, as you can see, are exceptional. We are also, Madam Chair, a wireless campus, affording all students, faculty, and staff fast and free access to the power of the internet. Every new student is also engaged in a very detailed literacy information workshop as part of their freshman English course. Our decision to provide this service was not merely for convenience. At CSI and indeed all across CUNY, we believe that internet access is an essential part of building and maintaining a civil and educated society. We continue to do cutting-edge work in this area. Our faculty in the Computer Science Department has developed a proposal for inclusion in the federal and state stimulus plan. If implemented, the proposal would deliver free internet service on the Staten Island Ferry via broadband wireless technology. In addition, we continue to explore opportunities for the development of CSI learning communities that will network off-campus venues for the purpose of enhancing educational instruction. The system will use both broadband and wireless networks to expand access to communities such as senior citizens and high schools, and even buses carrying our CSI students, faculty, and staff. We have implemented a shuttle service this past September, and we're hoping to provide wireless service for students while they're being transported to the campus. This system will benefit not only traditional students, but also returning veterans, Americans with disabilities, part-time workers, and persons seeking retraining for new jobs and advancement. Reduced use of congested roadways and public transit are additional benefits for our city. As you can see, CSI is in sync with the work of this important committee. Once again, I'm delighted you've chosen CSI to host your hearing. I wish you a productive and excellent hour. Thank you.
So much for this facility. It's just a terrific move to this committee and the work that we have to do today. Speaking of the work that we have to do today, it never would get underway and never does get underway without the good offices of the chair of the City Council Technology and Government Committee, Council Member from the 6th District, Gail Brewer.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I am Gail Brewer, and I chair the Committee on Technology and Government, and I must admit, I didn't know that we would get to such a great day today, because not only has this committee worked incredibly hard and very intelligently, both with the chair and the chairs of the committee, the one who does the everyday work, and Chair Bell, who does the broader work, and all the members. We also have sort of a group of people who care desperately about broadband and figuring out a way that communities that are underserved get access. Those of you in this room, and I think those of you who might pay attention in the future, are the leaders on this topic. There are not millions of us, but there certainly are thousands, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate everyone being here today, because I know that you understand what we're trying to accomplish, and it's not easy. There's some really good news, though, which we'll hear later about, which is what makes me so pleased to be part of this discussion, which is thanks to our president, thanks to people in Congress, and thanks to Americans across this country. They are beginning to understand this, and although complicated, not yet transparent, but definitely clear that something's in the works, there are funds in Washington that can help match the great work that we've been trying to do, not yet successfully, but trying to do here in the city. So we kind of on a historic day today. We'll hear more about it. It's kind of cutting edge. Could, in fact, be something really positive for communities that need to be wired in our city and for institutions and nonprofits and governments and small businesses to be part of this next generation. It's really a pleasure, because without the work that everyone has put into this discussion and this topic up to now, we wouldn't be at this point. So I want to say thank you. I also want to thank Tanal Mahajra from our office, Sam Juan from our office, Jeff Baker, Council to the Committee, Colin Castor, who's the person who handles some of the writing, and certainly all the policy analysts, and the Sergeant in Arms, Israel Rodriguez, who comes with us often as we travel around the five boroughs. So this is the last of our hearings, but certainly not the end of the discussion or the end of the report. I believe we also have staff here from Council Member Otto and Council Member and State Senator Andy Randall, and I really appreciate your being here, and I want to thank all the elected officials and the borough president for stepping out because you helped us publicize this event and this hearing here today. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay. That applause is richly deserved and should be long sustained. There is no more articulate, more insistent, or more informed voice on issues facing the city and technology than Gail Brewer's over many years now. As I mentioned earlier, I don't actually chair this committee. I merely play a chair at borough hearings. And I'd like to introduce now the person who is the chair of the committee, Sean Bell.
Good morning, everyone. It is certainly a pleasure for the entire committee to be here, to join each of you, and hopefully it will be a rich dialogue around what your concerns are relative to where the technology is going, broadband in particular. Today, as Councilmember Brewer said, is the last of our series of town hall meetings, so to speak. So today is an opportunity to get everything that you've missed in the last meetings for those of you who have attended. The purpose of this committee is really to look at each segment of the city and to understand what the needs are. So today you have an opportunity to sort of voice your concerns, voice your opinions, and certainly provide us with comments. We're going to be sort of looking at all of your comments, all of your concerns, and taking them into consideration as we look to really formulate a strategy overall for New York City. The next step for our committee will be to sort of not only take your ideas and comments, but also to look at the studies that have been put out. And as Councilmember Brewer said, to really look at some of the exciting things that are going to be coming out relative to the stimulus funds and so forth. So on behalf of the entire committee, I'd like to encourage each of you to really take the opportunity to let us know what you think and where we can be of service and what we can do as a committee. And collectively, I can assure you that we're very much interested in not only trying to address a lot of your concerns, but really trying to formulate a strategy that works well for New York City. And I think we have the time is right. It's been a long way for us to get here, but the time is right. So without any further ado, I'm going to turn things over to David Burchell so we can get the show going. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Bell. What I'd like to do now is just ask the members of the committee to introduce themselves briefly, those you haven't heard from yet, and then we will get underway and I'll explain the order of business. So we can start on my far left, Jose Luis Rodriguez, please.
My name is Jose Luis Rodriguez. I'm the president and CEO of HITN, which stands for the Hispanic Information and Telecommunications Network. We are in Brooklyn, New York. Thank you.
My name is Anthony Townsend. I'm a technology analyst at the Institute for the Future and also a co-founder of NYC Wireless.
Morning. My name is Neil Pariser, Senior Vice President of SOBRA, South Bronx Economic Development Corporation. Been very involved in broadband, something we need to lift up every community, and it was a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the council for me.
I'm Avi Nizavani, the Chief Information Officer of the New York City Housing Authority.
And Vinny Grippo, Chief of Staff at the New York City Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications.
Thanks, everyone. Our purpose here today, as Chairman Bell mentioned, is to hear from you and your concerns relating to broadband in Staten Island particularly, but if you'd like to essay a larger sphere of influence, that's great. We're interested in hearing all the ideas that you have to bring to the committee. This is how this will work. I will call names. If you do want to speak, please remember that you must fill out one of these forms, and those are available at the table just outside the door to this auditorium. I will call them in the order that I received them, and because we don't have a large number of names, normally at these hearings we limit people to two-minute comments. Today we will go to 3 minutes, and I believe that we don't have, a clock. No, we don't have a clock here, right? So when you have 1 minute left, I will do this. So just showing you the 1 minute mark, and then I ask you to wrap your remarks up within those next 60 seconds, please. After you're finished, members of the committee may or may not have questions for you, so please remain behind the microphone, and then I will indicate when it's time to move on to the next speaker. So if that is all clear, microphone is over here, stage right. I would like to call to the microphone Sam Farag from SCORE.
Thank you, Councillor Brewer, and all your colleagues here today in our borough to listen to us about the need for more investment in the broadband arena and why. My name is Sam Farag, and I am the chairman of SCORE Chapter 476. SCORE stands for Service Corps of Retired Executive, and Council to American Small Businesses. We are a not-for-profit group staffed by volunteers and operate as an arm of the United States Small Business Administration, the SBA. As a self-sufficient operation, we receive little funding from the SBA and from our elected officials, which we are hoping to increase after they hear my testimony. Our goal are to provide startup small businesses and established businesses free, confidential, face-to-face, and cyber counseling, as well as visiting them at their business's location. We also provide seminar and a website resources. We have been servicing the need for Staten Island business community for more than 25 years. Commerce and internet had increased greatly in the recent years. As such, we have been counseling all our clients on how to become more and more involved with the use of the internet and as part of their marketing strategy. SCORE has been extremely active in providing seminars on the latest marketing technique made possible by the growth of the Web2 by using the blogs, social networks such as Facebook, YouTube, and many other Web2 programs. Our client has obtained many new contacts and customers. We also go to the high school on the island and provide them with seminars for career building and entrepreneurship. Here are some of the interest statistics about internet in the high school, in the schools.
About 30 seconds left, Mr. Farag.
Oh, thank you. All right, we'll jump over. Just some stuff I found surfing the net, and maybe you can consider some of the things. The Swedish government subsidized purchase via tax deductible for companies that bought computer for their employees' personal use. The result that almost 90% of the Swedish can get access to the internet at home and PCs. DSL, it's almost going to be obsolete. other technology is available, satellite and other things. U.S. user pay $53 a month for high-speed service compared to $32 in Germany and $33 in Britain. Thank you for listening and welcome to our island.
Thank you very much, Mr. Farage. Please remain standing for questions from the committee.
Thank you very much. My question would be, since you are involved, and we thank you, with the small business community of Staten Island, I know you mentioned that you do cyber counseling. What do you think the percentage is of those businesses that do have access? And I know that Sobro in the South Bronx has worked hard on this with some of their small businesses, because one of the problems is sometimes even if you have access, you don't really know how to use it to help your bottom line. So how do you think more access would be helpful, and how do you think we should be supporting those that do have access for your small business?
Sure. We get referral from SCORE National. Anybody in any place, you can just send request, you know, to counseling depending of what the subject is. So we have 20 members and very experienced in a lot of things. So when we get, when Washington get, they will send it to us, we apply right away. The issue is for us like DSL or any other technology, and the cost also. So it's very hard because we don't really get much money to do that. We also refer our client when they come to us. If they cannot come, they still can send us email, and we correspond with them back and forth through email and any subject they need.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
Thank you.
I'd next like to call Dr. Salvatore Volpe, who represents the Medical Society of the State of New York. Dr. Volpe.
Good morning. I want to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to come here. In addition to working for the State Medical Society, I also work for the New York City Department of Health Mental Hygiene PCIP program. And we've currently deployed 1,000 EHRs as of the end of December, and we hope to deploy another 1,000 over the next year. And private practice here on Staten Island for about 19 years. One of the things that we've been doing, in addition to looking at how to get electronic health records at the doctor's offices, is how to work the other side of the equation and get patients more involved. And that's where broadband, I think, makes a big difference. There are at least six different activities that patients would be involved with. It would be looking up information for themselves, looking up information for someone they care about, purchasing medications and perhaps durable medical equipment. It could also be participating in support groups, as well as communicating with their doctors, and also, after they look up something on the internet, at the office visit, talking to the healthcare providers about what they need. It's only when you have broadband that you have this concept of always on. I mean, I'm old enough now to remember when I had tin cans when I was a little kid, and a rotary princess phone in my parents' room, and now I've got this wireless network in my house. And the difference for me is to download a 10-megabyte file, which you can get from Medline Plus or the CDC, could take over a half hour with a 56K dial. But with broadband, it's like 30 seconds. So what they've done in Medline Plus, for instance, they have translations in Spanish. So if someone wants to learn about asthma, wants to learn about a procedure that's coming up, anyone can look this up, but it would be a barrier if they had to do it with dial-up. So broadband gives them the opportunity to get a lot of information, but also communicate with their healthcare providers. We set up a patient portal in our practice so patients can communicate with us whether they need refills, appointments, specialist referrals, but also just to ask us questions. Again, broadband facilitates this two-way communication. And unlike some physicians who maybe were a little concerned that they would be swamped with emails, really it doesn't happen. It covered, as far as our patients, we have patients up to 85 who are emailing me. So that's a great thing for me because it makes my office more efficient. There's less telephone time for simple things that can be handled the way we do everything else, order airline tickets, do our ATM banking. So I want to encourage the city to please promote broadband access, you know, throughout all demographics, especially the underserved, where they can get access to libraries, community centers, religious centers. That's it.
Thank you, Dr. Volpe. Are there questions for
Dr. Volpe? Have you found that a number of your patients do not have the access to the broadband? Is that your concern?
Yes. depending on where they live, they may or may not have cable, but cable's about 98%, I think, on Staten Island. They may or may not have fiber, but in the poorer communities, they tend to rely more on dial-up modems. They don't necessarily have the subscription fee of like $100 a month to do these combo packages that are available. So that, I think, is a barrier to them.
So it's a question of cost.
Question of cost. And also, it's not just broadband access at home. There's also the concept of internet access on their smartphones. Because one of the things we're looking to do potentially is having the electronic health record send out reminders to patients. You have an appointment tomorrow. It's flu season. You should be getting your flu shot. We could also be giving them other reminders. You need to go for a colonoscopy. We're overdue for that mammogram. You can make it as explicit or not as obvious as possible, depending on HIPAA regulations and so on. But the idea of being able to push out information to patients no matter where they are, and even a free cell phone can take a text message, is a great thing. But we want to expand it beyond cell phones to encourage them to do stuff from home. And with this two-way communication, in addition to me reminding you to go for your appointment, we will have the capability of the patient replying back saying, yes, they're going to come, or I already got my flu shot. And then it will be discussed later on. It's not meant for a long dialogue. But broadband, this instant on, no matter where you are, facilitates this. And we're seeing a larger number of people using more intelligent phones as opposed to just the typical cell phone that I gave my parents, for argument's sake.
Dr. Volpe, I was curious as to what you've observed and experienced in adoption by the senior population information that can be provided to the facility.
I can say that the first hurdle was getting the doctors to get the electronic health records. The next hurdle is now having the patients know that this stuff is even available. So we're looking at producing marketing materials that would be disseminated throughout the city so that patients would know your doctor, if he or she belongs to this program, has a patient portal. Feel free to go to, again, public library, community health center, religious center, and there could be a kiosk where a person could enter information and communicate with it. Now, so right now, we haven't broached that on a large basis. I can just tell you from my own personal experience that we've been able to collect at least 50 to 75% of our patients' emails. And I send out quarterly reminders to patients. And it's very encouraging when they reply back. It may take them 30 days. It's not like me every 15 minutes. You know, your BlackBerry is constantly reminding me things to do. But it's not meant to be 911. It's meant to be, let's maintain a dialogue. Let's encourage you to do what's better for you. I just got certified for a patient-centered medical home. And the concept behind that is, let's not just provide urgent care if you're a primary care doctor, but complete care. And that means we have to teach patients to take care of themselves. And again, we've got a website. It's a static page. It's nothing too fancy. But it's got links to the CDC, to Medline Plus, to welfare agencies, other sites, so that patients can access information before they come into the office or after they leave.
We have been joined by committee member Tom Dunn of Verizon. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I left Verizon in September and went to Fordham University.
A noble posting, sir.
Welcome to the University.
It's a wonderful thing.
I love this place.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you should just take over HHS and so on and so forth.
I did pay my taxes, so that would be embarrassing. Thank you. I have a question.
Yes, the quick question I have is, I know that Dr. Frieden has been pushing this. We put city council money into it with some of the community health centers, trying to get them up to par, and of course the hospitals. So just in general in Staten Island, I know it's hard to get the doctors to feel comfortable, it's hard to get the patients to feel comfortable. Do you think there's enough funding and collaboration with the community health centers here and the hospitals also on electronic health records?
Yes, I believe there is a certain amount of collaboration. There's also inertia from the physicians because they're concerned about not just the cost of the software, which through the city deal is like an 85% discount, so that's not a real barrier. The barrier for physicians is a belief, and that's what I try to encourage when I lecture these doctors, that there is a support system. The typical model is you buy a software package from a vendor, and you shake hands, and then they go away. And then if the computer gives you that blue screen on that, you don't know what to do. Well, what we've done with PCIP is we've enveloped them in the equivalent of a patient-centered medical home, but this is for electronic health records. So that we've got, not only did we give them 3 to 4 days of training like I've done, we only had 3 days, we gave them 10 days. In addition to 10 days of formal technical training, we have a quality assurance experts that are going into the practices weeks and months later to remind them of what's available in the system, but also to address questions as they arise. It's that support system that's going to permit this project to survive. And as far as I know, we have like a 99% retention rate after a year compared to the industry average, which is about 75%. And I think that extra 28% or 23% is because we provide that TLC after the software is installed. Doctors need that. They don't want to be put in a position where they're staring at this laptop and at the patient and it's giving them a big question mark. They need to be able to call someone and get help. And that's what we're helping them to do, is feel comfortable. So I think over the next few months, we're going to see a larger adoption here on Staten Island, because what happens is you get the early adopters, but then what happens is there are a lot of Me Toos that come out. And once they see that it's not just Volpe, but it's someone else and someone else, then it'll move along.
Thank you. Yes. You mentioned a number of areas where it should be addressed. If you have the opportunity to enumerate three areas that you will prioritize in terms of the opportunities that might be there for funding based on what the Obama administration have indicated in terms of the area of health, that they want to do a number of things in that area, and the broadband stimulus package. What would be those three things that you would recommend should be a priority in New York City in the health area?
Well, on the health area, if there is an adoption by the underserved communities, it's irrelevant how many wires we put out in the city. So one is a big educational piece. We have to let people know what's available. Two, we need to provide them with content that's useful. So New York City is very unique. I mean, we have about 150 to 5,000 languages now. We need to work from the top and down and try and get as much translated into languages that people can understand. It's not enough for me to push a reminder about mammograms and the importance of mammograms to someone who doesn't speak English. So we need to let people know that the stuff is out there. We need to put it in a language that's accessible to them. And then I think what we also need to do is we need to look at the information that's going to be coming back from PCIP. With the Take Care New York initiative, one of the advantages is with the electronic health records, we're going to push out reports. It's going to be de-identified so patients' confidentiality is maintained. But we're going to be looking at gaps in care. It will be the first time, other than a doctor at a dinner meeting complaining about something and not knowing if the right person is listening, that we're going to be able to collect this information. And then it will be up to the city to look at this. An example would be mammogram centers. I use that as an analogy all the time. You look at Staten Island, relatively affluent borough. I think we have about 25 mammogram centers, MRI centers, 25 MRI centers, but I think we have 2 mammogram centers. Now, if my mom misses her appointment for her mammogram tomorrow, she may have to wait another 365 days to get another appointment. It's just a matter of, there just isn't enough centers. Well, once payers can get access to these areas of deficiencies, it makes it easier to target. So it may turn out that we need more mammogram centers, and we have to figure out how to do it. I'm also on the board of a MedMal company, an insurance company, and I can tell you, the number one reason for litigation in New York State is failure to diagnose breast cancer. If you're a radiologist, you may not choose to go into mammogram reading because of the high litigation rate. Doesn't mean you're not a good physician. It just means that there's a little bit more stress involved in that job. And the reimbursement for mammograms has been historically low. So the premiums are high, the reimbursement is low, the stress level is high. Maybe that's why we have 25 MRI centers and only 2 mammogram centers, when we have several hundred thousand women, and at least 100,000 of them might qualify for mammograms on an annual basis.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
I'd like to call next the Reverend John Ryan from Project Hospitality.
Good Good morning, Councilwoman Brewer and chairs, and Mr. Dunn. I hope Father McShane treats you well. I am a technological idiot, and there is a great deal of humor in the office that I was sent here like Daniel in the lion's den. I'm a substitute for Reverend Terry Troy. But let me just say this. Project Hospitality for years has been serving the hungry, the homeless, and people with HIV/AIDS on this island. It's a very underserved population, and it's precisely what you're doing in terms of broadband hearing that can address the really terrible divide that exists now between our clients and a number of people on Staten Island. These are people who not only don't have access to a number of things, but they don't even know they're there. So the key issues here are money, education, and access. And it certainly sounds like the work that's been done in the city already through your committee and city council and what's coming out of Washington now provides hope to address these issues. We have clients who come in daily to our sites. We have a sophisticated IT operation in our offices. And these clients come in now, and there are more and more of them weekly coming in because of the economic downturn. If it were not for access to our limited number of computers and some of those in libraries, they would not be able to do job hunts, job research, finding out about their benefits. There's another issue here that's real. For a number of people who are coming to us, frustration levels are very real. Unless the facility provides something that can be done easily, which you can educate people to, they're going to give up. And if they give up, they continue this divide, and they're being underserved. So what do groups like us need? We need to see more coming from the city in terms of funding, in terms of ability to access things, and we need the ability to know at times where funding streams exist that we might not know about. So I just commend the committee, and I commend the people who are doing liaison with Washington now, because unless this is done, we're going to continue to have an underclass, not only of people economically, but a technological underclass that is going to provide major social problems for us in the future. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions for the record?
Just not technological ones.
I promise you, like Father McShane.
Excellent. Thank you.
My question is, when one of the issues that we've been grappling with as a committee and in general is how and where and with what kind of staffing. You basically have a wonderful computer training center. You can call it whatever you want, but that's certainly what you have. What kind of staffing do you need for that? Because certainly frustration comes. You may not know the best job seeking benefit sites, et cetera. Just having the computer may not be enough. What would you see as the best way to have a CTC?
Well, if I knew what a CTC was, I'd probably answer that highly intelligently. But I would say this. One of the key things we need you address, and that's the ability for language and translation. If this stuff is just in English, a very substantive part of people will be eliminated from it. So we need translators, we need people who are technologically competent, and we need the facilities in the locations where people can access, because so many of the people we serve will not have computers in their own home.
Yeah. You mentioned that in order for these centers to be successful, that an educational component must exist. Can you explain a little bit that?
Well, I think so many of our people don't know what you're talking about. They wouldn't know the word broadband from a turkey. They just wouldn't know it. It's not something, they might have heard the word in passing, but the concept for so many people, including a number of immigrants, is a foreign one. And that has to be able to be easily explained to people with hands-on ability and not much frustration, because otherwise you'll lose them. Later on, you can tell me what that, whatever it was.
Can I ask a low-tech technology question?
Oh, certainly. Or a no-tech.
Are you on broadband?
We have some facilities on our sites, but not many as far as I know. But I would be lying if I said I was sure of that.
So you're not completely broadband?
Oh, certainly not. I don't think so.
And when people come in, you have staff, and council is saying that, would assist them in terms of how to do research? Is that pretty much what you're doing?
In terms of helping them search them?
Right, for jobs.
We have, but we certainly don't have enough staffing and funding to do that well, especially in the light of, for instance, in the last 6 months, we have served more meals, and that's the point of entry for people. Frequently hungry people come in, they get legal advice, they get medical advice, they get this, that, and the other thing. But we've had a 33% rise in the number of people coming to us in the last few months. So we're swamped. So as we move to these type of things, which are critical, we need more staff, more money.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
I'd like to call Dr. Jung Young John from the College of Staff and Island.
Good morning. Welcome to Staten Island, particularly welcome to College of Staten Island. My name is Jung Young Jung. I'm a faculty member at the Computer Science Department of this college. I just hearing this news a few days ago, so I wish I can better prepare. But what I would like to comment on is I'm very glad to hear we have several members of the community is expert in the wireless and broadband communication. The communication has been from the dawn of the human civilization, communication has been a critical part of our civilization and our ability to advance our civilization and our living standard. There has been a dream, I call it, it's three keywords, is be able to communicate, access information from everywhere, for any time, and for everyone. With the advantage of computer and wireless technology, we have achieved, this dream has becoming reality. But unless we can do it for everyone, that's the key, for everyone. And we cannot fulfill our dream fully. And my comment is mostly in two areas. One is within College Staten Island, where I have a lot of colleague members, we have the resource expertise in telecommunication and broadband communication area. And serving local community of Staten Island, we wish we have we were better funded, and we have several proposals currently in the working, and also several projects in the progress. And that's the one general area we think we should use this resource more. Second area is in terms of particular concrete ideas and proposals. We do have some of the proposals in the working. For example, one is we should provide broadband wireless service for the ferry for the ferries. So we gave the ferry riders a free access to the internet, and they can check email, browser, and it will make Staten Islanders a better, a more productive, and a better adaptive working force. Technically, that can be done. I think this committee is exactly what we needed to coordinate all the agents, MTA, port authorities, to make that happen. And we have the expertise, can make that happen. We need funding, we need help. There's a lot of other areas in terms of how to improve people's living standard in urban environment. There are several colleagues of mine who are working on that too. For example, with aging populations, we can provide some wireless sensor capabilities so that the senior can stay home, meanwhile have their critical condition be monitored and take care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chung. Questions for Dr. Chung?
Yeah, very quickly. I have heard, I think already, by three of the panels, of the presenters, wireless, and you emphasize on that. Can you tell me why wireless is a very important technology to be available for what you need to do?
Certainly. Very easy, and obviously, if you provide internet service on the ferry, not only on the terminal, but on the boat is moving. It would be difficult to attach a wire to the boat. So wireless is definitely advantage technology. Secondly, is my research area recently, I've been working with telecommunications and IT industry for over 10 years before I joined college. I worked for AT&T and Lucent before. For example, for the aging societies, we have developed some concept called smart home, which is giving the senior citizens, and they want to prefer stay home, but they want their health condition closely watched, monitored. And it will be difficult to attach a wire to a human body while that you don't want to restrict the freedom of movement of that person. So that's why wireless and with other technologies and become so important.
Chairman Bell, you mentioned that the university has been working on several proposals. I'm interested to understand what type of proposals you're putting together and you know, what needs you see.
One, for example, in the free internet service of ferry terminals, that's actually one of the concrete proposals we are currently working on. And I have one page of executive summary I can share with the committee members. There's other proposals in telecommunication area. For example, with the smart home concept. Another one advantage, a huge advantage to us is we, given the limited budget, we developed some models, we want to validate the models, we rely heavily on simulation, computer simulations. And at the college recently, we have, with the help of the city and the government, we have probably one of the fast, the powerful computer center, high-performance computer center located in this campus. We've been using that to work on simulation. So there's a proposal more like to draw the research and which have the computation need to use the facilities and things like in that area, in that nature.
Do you envision many of these things, if you're able to get the funding, to sort of for you to really be able to put them on a universal sort of platform? I mean, you mentioned specific things, that, you know, such as the Staten Island Ferry and so forth, but in terms of being able to replicate these concepts.
Can I ask a related question, which is, you know, is there any commercial spin-off potential from these projects that would generate economic activity or create new firms in Staten Island and elsewhere?
Yes, I think that provided a free service, the service is free because it should be free because we want to provide a service to everyone. There is a digital divide, and a gentleman come before me already testified that. So that's why that's important to provide a service free. In terms of the economic benefit, for local economic, and not only we have a better workforce because they can come in the ferry. You can think about a scenario. People start getting in the ferry terminals. They'll be able to check email, check what's happening, reschedule, upload whether or not there is a change in scheduled meeting before they reach the office. They even can print out proposals, presentations, and remotely from while they're riding the ferry. Then the report will be read at the office. Besides the productivity, for the local economies, and they certainly can advertise their local product and service and attract tourism to Staten Island. And there's the list that can go on.
Do you have some sense, first of all, thank you for your wonderful testimonies. Do you have some sense of how many parks or other public spaces in Staten Island are wireless, if any?
We have one member from the project of the New York City Wireless Project. And I located the web information. I think there's Staten Island Mall. I don't know whether or not it's a chapter or is they mentioned on the website, on the New York City Wireless website, there's a top spot on Staten Island Mall.
Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you.
I'd now like to call Angela Dayudo from the Downtown Staten Island Council.
Good morning.
Are those copies of your question?
I do have copies of them. The Downtown Staten Island Council, we are a not-for-profit organization, community development organization, dedicated to the continued revitalization of the downtown Staten Island community, specifically focusing on business attraction, the Bay Street corridor, community stabilization, programs that improve overall quality of life for residents and businesses alike in the communities of St. George, Tompkinsville, Stapleton, and Clifton area of Staten Island, so the North Shore. Broadband technology is beneficial in many ways. Basically, as a not-for-profit organization, the Downtown Staten Island Council utilizes broadband technology. It also is beneficial for our members, which are many are small and medium-sized business owners, entrepreneurs. We also deal with the community, with community services we provide, so the access and the access to the internet, broadband technology improves that access for our residents that live and work in the community. With current economic conditions, broadband technology actually allows for businesses and individuals, families, to save money in many ways. As a not-for-profit, we can be more efficient as a small business owner. You can also be more efficient, and we see that in various ways. One thing is, by broadband technology, you're able to download and transmit files more efficiently. You're able to market your programs more efficiently. You can save on labor, postage, and printing using e-blast, emails, just sending out public PR pieces, videos on your website, things like that. So the small businesses, the entrepreneurs we deal with are using that more and more, and broadband allows them to do that. Yes? One thing I do want to mention is regard to economic development, we see Wi-Fi we recommend creating Wi-Fi zones that we see it would be a wonderful economic development benefit, getting people to reinvent and utilize town centers. For example, we have the St. George Library, and you can utilize Wi-Fi right outside of the library. We would love to see Wi-Fi in the surrounding areas, planned green space with the federal courthouse in St. George. For example, in Stapleton, we have a newly renovated park, and again, you have a library right across the street. I haven't tested if you can actually get Wi-Fi in that particular park, but definitely having that as a way to enhance economic development, attracting businesses, allowing for the use of public space for the entire community, Wi-Fi can really help with that, and broadband technology is a wonderful tool in that.
Thank you. So. Questions for the staff?
Thank you. Couple things. Number one, your business community, have there been problems getting access to them?
You know what? We have not done a real survey of that. We can get back to you on that, but we haven't done a real survey. We know that just changing over for ourselves, there's glitches in just changing over from our own experience, you know, to using broadband, just the setup and the...
You have a business super district in Staten Island, several commercial strips.
Yes.
Have there ever been any discussions about them sponsoring Wi-Fi?
In our particular area, we don't. West Brighton does have one, so I don't know if anyone's here from West Brighton Local Development Corporation. They'd probably be able to answer that. I think we'd be open to that, absolutely, even if we're not a member of Business Improvement District, because we have about over 200 members that are active business owners in our area. So I think it's something we'd be open to.
Right. Only because there are some funds coming down now from federal government, where if there is a match, you could provide that.
Okay.
It's the correct dialogue.
Great.
And Mr. Reckler, the question.
Thank you.
Hi. First, I want to say you guys are doing a great job. I'm a resident of Staten Island for 30 years, and there's a noticeable difference in that community over the last few years. It's really making a big difference. So I wanted to throw that out. But I was just curious to know, it seems as though the businesses that are working with you, clearly they're recognizing the advantage to having broadband. When they come to you, do you find that that's something you have to sort of sell to them, or is it something that generally small businesses, particularly in that area, are asking for? They realize they need it when they come in the door.
I think the St. George Stapleton community tends to attract a lot of entrepreneurs, so we have a lot of savvy, also a lot of small business owners are more educated, younger. So I think the age group, they're more open to that than an older, more traditional businesses even. So, but we are in the process actually of adding a social networking aspect to our website. So we hope to lead by example and share information with the businesses to really use as many tools as possible to, get your services, your programs out there.
You mentioned the library and the park.
Yes.
That's an ongoing problem. We tried some years ago to get the libraries to kind of be a center that could then broadcast, web and free wireless into the park. But it turns out the libraries have E-rate money from the federal government, and if we sort of mess with the E-rate, then the libraries could be hurt economically. So that's something that we're trying to look at. But I'm just telling you, you're on the right track. We got stuck, and maybe we could work on it in the near future because it's something that's important. But have you worked with other businesses to try to get free Wi-Fi in the park? Has there been that effort, and would that be helpful to you?
It would be helpful. We haven't done that, but in Tompkinsville, we have a newly renovated park, Tompkinsville Park, and in Stapleton, Tappan Park. So the fact that we have these two, beautifully renovated parks with wonderful seating and two lot, the library in Stapleton's right across the way. It's a no-brainer. It's just a matter of, collaboration and getting it done. So.
Thank you,
Mr. Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Gayatri Sudhansana, who is a student here at CSI.
Good afternoon. And I'd like to begin by saying that broadband is extremely important to my life. In my opinion, it's more of a necessity than a comfort, because in school we're expected to log on to Blackboard, which is a site which can take hours to load because of the amount of people who log on without like a high-speed internet server. And with broadband, if it's readily available in campus and at homes for students, it would enable us to perform better in school. And they're becoming more, like the Blackboard and all hybrid classes, they're becoming more popular in CSI. Last year I had to take one of my first hybrid classes. Instead of meeting bi-weekly, we met once in class, and the other day we're expected to log on to Blackboard and communicate on discussion board. And since many people are logging on at the same time, it can delay your response and delay your submitting of papers and other, it could delay it tremendously. But if we had broadband at home and at school, we'd be able to work more efficiently, and teachers now expect for us to do a great amount of research. And if we had, and if it's readily available at our fingertips online, all we have to do is log on. And if we have that access, I'm sure that we'll be able to compete in a classroom setting more efficiently.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Sudhansana?
That's good. Tom? Did you go to high school here in Staten Island?
Yes, I did. Susan and I were in high school.
And how long ago was that?
2 years ago.
Could you let us know what facilities were available to you at your high school?
We had computers in the library, not in the classrooms, which I think we should have computers in every classroom. And that's it. If we wanted to work on the computers and submit assignments or something, we had to go to the school library during our lunch hours.
Right. And at home?
At home, I have broadband, but it's not everyone does. And it puts me at an unfair advantage. And I think everyone should have the right to to have broadband for them to get their work done.
I know this is just a guess on the spot, but how many of your fellow students in college here have it at home?
I personally know of five of my friends who do not even have a computer in their own homes, let alone broadband. So I would assume it will only expand more.
Thank you.
I'm interested in knowing your friends, do they have cell phones?
Yes.
How do they use them?
Their parents provide, because it's more.
Excuse me?
So their parents can provide the cell phone so they can keep in touch with them. And they find cell phones more of necessary than for them to do schoolwork. So students would want the broadband to do schoolwork, but it's cell phones more of a safety issue, in my opinion.
Do they use it for text messaging?
No,
they don't text messaging. So the cell phone is not a device that is being used to
it's just a communication purpose, the cell phone, as for the parents to keep in touch with them.
Only for that.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much. And we'll try to keep the portal up at the beginning of classes next year. I'd next like to call B. Victor from CUNET.
I have to tell you from the beginning that I have been led down the wrong road. I was told that I could have up to 5 minutes to speak. And I called up to make sure. So your three-minute thing is going to be a little bit of a problem for me. I'll do the best I can.
We trust your adaptive capacities.
Yeah. Good luck. And I was also told that you were asking us to testify as to our personal experiences. So that's what I prepared for you. So, okay. In 1993, as a result of a grant given to the JCC, Dr. Stephen Frohman, Sam Finkelstein, and me were able to become one of the learning centers of an international program called SeniorNet. The two gentlemen unfortunately have passed away, and I have, however, continued to enjoy the privilege of being part of this wonderful program. We, volunteer seniors, have the privilege of being able to provide classes to those 50-plus that included different sessions, a variety of subjects. In this particular session, we start with beginners, we go into beginners to advanced, we go into internet, we go to Photoshop, we've had Excel, Quicken, and more. And everybody who teaches these programs are seniors, and we teach only two seniors, which is why in every single class, I can tell you that the subject of conversation is my husband, my son, my grandson, my granddaughter, and everybody else. Couldn't teach me. They talk too fast. I don't know what they're talking about. I gave up. They come in scared to death. And it's been one of our privileges. And I'll tell you that there are people in this audience who have become teachers, who have become assistants, who have become technicians, and who have worked with us all these years. So it's been very exciting. I'm going to skip as much as I can. You're going to miss a lot. Very valuable information. I just want to tell you what it has meant to me, and I'm going to mention my age simply so that you will realize that this is something that older people can do. I'm 87, and I learned how to do computers. I think I took a class here at college, one class, and I was dragged screaming and crying into teaching other seniors. It has been a learning experience for me, and it has been a learning experience for every one of the... I wish all of those of you from SeniorNet would stand up so they can see some of you here. These are all people who are all... You notice the hair is not yellow or brown. It's white and gray. Anyhow, but this is my personal experience. I started writing a column for the Staten Island Advance in 1987. I would use a typewriter to prepare the articles, and then sometimes at 11 at night, drive down to the paper's building to deliver it. I now simply type my column on the computer, and with a click or two, send it to the paper in a moment. All cards, congratulatory or others, are prepared on my computer. I can reach my children and my friends so easily. I have people in Israel, I have people down in Texas, all I have to do is click, point and click. And I tell you this because there are a lot of us, younger than me, older than 50, who never saw a computer. They're scared to death of it. We at SeniorNet have talked about the possibility of home teaching, but we've been stopped because of the fact that there is not broadband in all of these places all over the city, and we would like to continue to do this. The JCC, since we moved into the new building, has a wonderful computer center, but there are only 12 seats in it. We would like to see that expanded. We would like to be able to teach more. We would like to get more seniors comfortable. And I would like to piggyback on the doctor who spoke, because it would be absolutely wonderful for those of us who live at home, alone, who have all these senior medical illnesses that come along, to be able to get on a computer, to be able to reach a physician, not have to wait 6 weeks to see a doctor, or maybe go into the doctor's office and have that 10-minute period that we're allowed these days to talk to the general practitioner. It would be marvelous if we could teach all the older people not to be afraid of these computers. Let's see. In 1987 was the year that I began to take classes, and I started the Senior Olympics of Staten Island the same year and ran it for 19 years. There's no way I could have managed that without the computer. No way at all. I've collected humor since 1987. And the ease of collecting has increased markedly through the convenience of my computer, and I continue to have the pleasure of being able to share it with many other senior organizations. Keeps me active. Being on that computer has given me the ability to stay healthy, to keep my mind active, and to be able to be an active person in this community, not to worry my children. They don't have to call me up every day to see, are you okay, Mom? Is everything all right? I live alone. I've been a widow since 1977. And I would like to tell you that more and more and more seniors are coming to Staten Island. More and more seniors are going to be with us. They need to have this way of communication. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Victor. That did go to 5 minutes, and it was worth every single second.
Thank you.
A better example of broadband and its fine effects. Are there questions for Ms. Victor?
I'm curious, how much of what seniors get trained to use computers and use the internet?
I'm sorry. Also a little hard of hearing.
Okay. The seniors that you've trained to use computers and the internet, how much of what they're doing online is talking to each other rather than talking to experts, say, like doctors or other kinds of professionals? I mean, is it a valuable peer support tool for them?
Anyone of you guys want to answer that? A lot of it. A lot of it. As a matter of fact, when they come into our classes, the first thing they say is, when do we learn about the email? When do we learn about internet? That's the prime thing they want to know. Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Interesting presentation, said a lot there. Trying to understand, if you were to rank what you think are the barriers to seniors using, on Staten Island, using internet and broadband, is it the fear of the computer, is it the access to broadband, or is it just the lack of people to teach them how to do this? How would you rank those?
I think the fear is number one. I have no idea about the inability to have broadband. That's something I don't know about. And what was the third thing?
And whether or not it's just the inability to understand how to access a computer.
Well, the fear goes along with the inability. I mean, they tell us that they bring their computer, that somebody gives them a computer for Christmas, and it's still in the box 2 years later. So, anything?
So it's not been the unavailability of broadband service that has been...
I don't know. I don't know how much that is. Mel?
Yeah, I just want to say, I think pricing is the biggest barrier for broadband. Mm-hmm. Many of these seniors are on fixed incomes. They don't even consider it a priority. Dial-up is satisfactory to them. But if pricing came down, they would go toward broadband.
Mr. Sir, would you just identify yourself for the record?
Mel Gluckster.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Another question, Mr. Gluckster, with regards to your statement. When you talk about affordability, what about the affordability of buying a computer? Then we talk about the affordability of the monthly service charge for broadband service.
That has to be a factor, too. That has to be a factor, too. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we did for a number of years, and it's kind of slowed down now, is we offered the social service agencies that serve seniors the opportunity to send their volunteers to come to our classes so they could learn to use the computer in the agency's offices where they're volunteering. But affordability, I'm sure, is a big factor.
Yes, I'm impressed with your physical and mental condition. I hope.
I thank you. I think it's the genes.
I hope we all look like you when we get there. You mentioned, and I think the Dr. Wolpe also alluded to, at least he's related, associated with mental health. And you mentioned having access as one way. I don't know if you mentioned or he mentioned, as one way that seniors can really improve their quality of life. We have seen, my organization right now is involved with the digital transition, and we've been providing emergency installations in that area in a number of parts of the country and in Puerto Rico a great deal. And we're finding out that just having a person to go there, and just we're talking about now low-tech technology, the digital television, is almost like a lifesaver for seniors that we visit. I'm curious to find out what is your perspective of being able not only to have access, but also to enable people in their own homes to assist them to have that access. You mentioned that you have centers where people can come in, and that's very important. We have heard testimony in a number of areas that having these centers is very important, very critical, especially people who don't have access. But to what extent being able to have that ability to go to the home and assist them is important for your membership?
Well, I imagine it would be terrible. I'm a nurse by profession, and so I can see that being able to communicate on a one-to-one basis, maybe more than once a day if you don't understand something, or maybe the diabetes is kicking up, or the blood pressure is going up, would be invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
I was referring more to people that do not have access now for different reasons. You know, how important will be to enable them, in other words, to make extra efforts to make sure that those people get the access and the technology in their homes? Because some of them might not be able to go to the centers. How important, what percentage of your population are homebound that having this kind of service will help them?
I'm afraid I don't know the answer. Does any of you?
I actually can speak from my own experience. I have elderly parents, and one of the things that I realized is that communication was very difficult with them when they were in Florida every year. So one of the things was the development of an optical scanning fax, if you will, to email system. Now, they were computer phobic completely. So this was a natural progression of easing them into broadband and communicating with email.
And your name, sir?
Frank Matarazzo, one of the companies in this. And this is, you know, to the point of, you know, email and broadband for the elderly. This changed their lives dramatically. I mean, they now came from the Stone Age into the 21st century. And through this broadband mechanism can now send prescriptions to us or proposals for work that are being done in their house where they might be getting ripped off or we can oversee. So now it takes that distance between here and Florida and shrinks it to real time. And I think, you know, making an extra effort to bring broadband to the elderly is extremely important, because I think that's going to make their lives easier as well as ours, you know, especially if you have elderly parents.
This is a very important topic, and I see a couple of hands up in the room, but we really can't turn this into an open discussion right now. So what I would like to do is to ask you, if you would like to provide testimony, to fill out a card and get it to you, and we will address that testimony when we can. Are there other questions for Ms. Victor? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for the wonderful work that you do with SeniorNet, and thank you, SeniorNet, for turning out so great. I'd next like to call Kim Falcon from Staten Island University Hospital.
Hi, good morning. My name is Kim Falcon. I'm the Director of Telecommunications for Staten Island University Hospital. Just to let you know a little bit about the hospital, it's a 714-bed tertiary care hospital located here on Staten Island. We had 42,000 inpatient discharges in 2008. We had 540,000 outpatient visits in 2008. And we had 98,000 emergency room visits in 2008. We have multiple sites on Staten Island, and we have multiple sites in Brooklyn. We also have a regional burn unit. The hospital has gigabit connectivity amongst its own campus, so we don't rely or don't need to rely on broadband like a smaller office would. However, we have a number of physician offices and other smaller branch offices that need to connect to our data center via broadband. Some of the things that we're doing at the hospital include, and I heard it spoken about at the federal level, is the electronic medical record for inpatient and outpatient clinics. Hopefully in probably 2010 or even later this year, we'll see e-prescribing begin to take hold. There's also patient health surveys that could happen from the home. If a patient had broadband at home, they could be able to fill out a survey that we could see online. EMR access or electronic medical record access at physician practices is something we like to see. And we also have a number of businesses or business partners that do things like Aramark is our cafeteria partner. They, you know, provide food services. Owens & Minor is a group that provides medical supplies. We have the Visiting Nurse Association there on campus, as well as in their own offices. And we're actually starting a credit union that's coming up soon. Just going to skip here. One of the barriers we see to broadband is clearly the cost. That overhead is a necessary evil. And when you talk to a lot of physician practices have to pay the business rate and not even the home rate. And then, however, that physician exists in basically in what is a house that's converted to an office. So it seems like it's a bit of an unfair thing to charge this $80 business rate for broadband versus a $50 other homeowner type rate. We'd like to see broadband really expanded. It's how the hospital does business with a lot of people, and it's a good way to have connectivity to the hospital.
Thank you, Mr. Baldwin. For you and for Ms. Victor and for anybody else, if you have prepared remarks, please give them to Sergeant Barnes, and we will be able to distribute those to the committee. Questions, Mr. Baldwin?
Thank you very much. One question I have is, what is the status of medical records now in terms of the number, perhaps, or how pervasive is it in Staten Island? And are you getting some assistance now in terms of funding for electronic health records, or is that something that you have to pay for yourself, or the federal grants, is the city helping you? I know there's a lot of push to try to collaborate with doctors' offices, community health centers, and hospitals, and I just don't know how effective it is in Staten Island.
I'm going to answer that to the best of my ability. I'm not sure of the federal dollars or state dollars that are you know, allotted to us for that type of project. I do know that the hospital itself has its own capital funds for a project like that, and that is actually an ongoing project which is I'm not mistaken, supposed to be implemented this year. So we're on our way to an electronic medical record, and that will be a real thing come the end of this year or early next year.
I'm Kathy Sandra, CIO from Staten Island. We actually got some help with the certificate of need, and they helped subsidize some of the costs associated with the clinical documentation and provider order entry system that we currently implement and run plans of implementing. We do have an electronic medical record right now that collects information related to patients' lab, radiology, pharmacy data, and they have patient demographics as well. And physician or clinical provider can go one place and get all of that information. We plan to do in the future is that will expand out where doctors can actually place orders. There will be rule sets, there will be order sets, so that when they actually place the order, they'll get alerts and know that they should do this, they shouldn't do this. There will be clinical references availability through broadband, through the internet, so they can actually pull up information to find out information about drugs or treatment plans or whatever. So we're in the process of that, and some of that is subsidized through
state funding. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. And now I will call Joey Cardona from the Siemens Family and Children's Society.
Hello, I'm Joe Cardona from Siemens Society. We are a foster care, daycare provider type of agency. I work in the IT department. I'm the director of IT. I work along with Jim Zalamato, who's here present, and our CEO, Nancy Valero, is present with us as well. We're a nonprofit, and as a nonprofit, there's really little and sometimes no funding available for the latest technology. In some corporations, the board members, I mean not the board members, but administration and even the IT guys and so forth, they have their BlackBerry phones and they can text, they can go back and forth. We really don't have that. We don't have the funds for that, but that's understandable. Because Jens and I are quite knowledgeable in the electronics and in the hardware end of it, we're able to make ends meet. We're able to make things work, even having the type of equipment that we do have. Some of our servers are Pentium 3s. Many of you may not understand what Pentium 3 is, but it's old technology. Pentium 4 is considered old today as well, and we're operating under those conditions. As far as broadband, we do have what's called a T1 line, several T1 lines and PRIs for our phone system, but the cost of that, for some, is close to $1,000 per line. We are a business, so we can't afford to take risk and depend solely on a broadband because, as many of you know, sometimes they're down for maintenance and who knows what happens that now you have no connection for an hour or two, and we can't afford that. And even senior citizens, as it was mentioned, if we had some sort of broadband and we didn't have someone on hand who can handle everything, there's tech support that one would require. And you know, if you have a problem with your machine and you call Dell or Compaq, they want you to pay $65 or $200 just to get that help. We had funding for a lab, and it was able to house pretty much about 14 to 16 students, and we lost those fundings. But it's not only the need of the broadband, we're in need of funding that would help train these students. Because it's one thing to provide broadband for someone, but the other thing is who's going to train the person how to use the computer? Who's going to make sure that things are secure? Well, you have identity theft and you have other people trying and wasting time trying to hack into your personal data. So even though if we wish that we can get some sort of funding, but it can't stop with funding just to provide the bandwidth, but also to provide a means to train those who are going to be using these computers and to explain to them how important it is not to give secure information. Much of us, many of us, probably receive emails saying, click here.
Mr. Cardona, we're out of time, so if you could just take a couple seconds to wrap up, please.
Okay, and you click here because you sent out a package or so forth. There's all your information. You entered it and it's gone. So we are in dire need of fundings that would help provide for, we have community programs, but not enough of them, that would provide a means where these kids can come after school and others and make use of these computers and get sufficient training.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there questions for Mr. Cardona?
You mentioned that you pay a considerable monthly premium for T1 service because you have critical services connected to the internet. I think that this may be the first that we've heard of that from a community-based community service organization in any of our hearings. And it's interesting because telecom reliability was, I believe, the number one priority for infrastructure in the 2005 telecom plan released by the City's Economic Development Corporation. That was mainly focused on financial services and other large corporations. So I'm curious, what are some of the services that you guys need absolutely 24/7 reliability for?
We have three locations, two remote offices, and ours located at 50 Bay Street is just a walk from the ferry. We have two PRI lines with MCI, Verizon Business Now, and therefore all our long-distance calls and calls to the community. There are a number of caseworkers on hand, and they're constantly having to be in touch with the foster parents or with other agencies and so forth. That's as far as the phone. We have 800 numbers that we provide to these parents as well. And we have the internet line, which is the T1 dedicated line, and we have the frame relay that goes between the remote offices to us. We implemented voice over IP, so you know, the offices come through us and they access our PRIs, our numbers to make the calls.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. President. I'd now like to call Dan Stevens of Stevens Enterprises.
Hi, my name is Dan Stevens from Stevens Enterprises, and I think my testimony is just going to be generic more, both on the business owner side and on the consumer side, because I think that's pretty relatable to everybody. I think that the internet is kind of like a rubber band that once it's stretched, it doesn't go back to its original position, and I think people have been using the internet from dial-up to broadband feel that way. Once you get to a certain point, you can't go back and you shouldn't go back. And I do think that the technology is out there to provide everybody with broadband right now. I don't think it's a matter of being able to provide it. I think it's a matter of not wanting to provide it yet for whatever reason it is. I own an e-commerce business. It's a private e-commerce franchise business. It's an accredited business. It spans around the United States. And we have other franchise owners that are around the United States. Our servers and our site is run by Microsoft, IBM, Intel, and Compaq, and you can't get better than that. However, as good as that is, it's a matter of people being able to get on this site and have good security and have fast, convenient, positive experience on the internet. And I think that's one of the biggest things now. When you don't have broadband, it gets to be very frustrating. Today, nobody has time anymore. Everybody wants to get on, do what they have to do, and get off. And at this point, doing business where people cannot have a positive experience because of the frustrations that they have because they don't have broadband causes business to lose money. Where the opposite happens when people do have a positive experience, can get on, get downloaded items, what they need, shop, do what they need, and be a consumer and have a positive experience. It means going on again and again, which means convenience for them, and it means revenue for the business owner. So I think just in general, again, I you know, today, about every 7 seconds, somebody gets on the internet for the very first time. Very first time. 2 years ago, it was 11 seconds. So we're in a big push for people to get on the internet. And I do believe that the technology is there, everything's there. We just have to get with the people who are in power to make this happen at a reasonable rate for everybody to have the ability to make the internet continue to go forward in a very positive and secure way. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Stevens?
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would now like to call Mark Lepari, who I understand is a student at New Dorp High School. We're definitely going to hold you 3 minutes because we want you to get back to class.
Thank you. First, I have to apologize for my appearance because an hour before this, I had no intentions of testifying. But my name is Mark Lepari. I'm a student at New Dorp High School. Upon realizing that, to my knowledge, that I'm the only high school represented here, I believe I had to scribble this up really quick to give you guys a fair testimony. I believe that broadband in schools would help very significantly. Currently, New Dorp has more typical low-speed internet. Connection problems constantly restrict student teachers and teachers from accessing the internet. Guidance counselors cannot access program websites to complete students' progress reports or to print a transcript or a program. Teachers can include online homework assignments on their websites. Interactive websites can also help educate students. Previous Regents test exams, as well as test prep, can be accessed from the school internet. Broadband access in the school library would benefit students to help research reports for students who don't have a computer at home or cannot get to a library. New Dorp has 3 computer labs, and numerous laptop computers are frequently shared throughout the school. Class group chats outside of school, such as like an online chat, could also occur as well, as an online study group, so to speak. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions for Mr. Lepari? Start with Jose.
Yes, how many students in your school have access to broadband and outside the school in your estimation?
New Dorp has about 2,500 students total. And I'd have to say 60 to 75% of them have an internet access outside of school. But that's only with a numerous amounts of problems. If we had access in the schools, it would make students' lives a lot easier. It would help increase grades, which would increase recognition for schools throughout the city.
What are the limitations that you see in the school? Can you very quickly describe for me how many is there a computer? Are there computers in every classroom that students have access to?
Not
or in labs.
Only the 3 computer labs students have access to. Teachers have their own computers in numerous classrooms, but classroom laptops that have class sets with the smart board and et cetera are circulated throughout the entire school building for every teacher to get a fair usage at the computer when they need it.
That 35% that does not have access, in your estimation, how do they get access? Outside.
Quite simply, they don't. This is the only way that they would be able to get this access.
Just a quick question. I'm not familiar with the high school. It's a New York City school?
Yes. It's a public New York City public school, yes.
And it does not have broadband access?
As far as I know, yes. No access.
There are 3 labs and no broadband.
We have a typical low-speed internet connection. But it's constantly down, which consistently prevents teachers and these guidance counselors from accessing student records and such.
And the school has somebody who's in charge of IT technology?
We do, but it always runs through HSST and ATS, the school programming systems that are out in the city that control everything, and it's out of our control if the internet is down.
Thank you.
You are an awesome student. My question is, for those students who do not resolve, we will work on your school. We'll figure out something. So just by being here, we will work on that.
Thank you.
The second issue is, so for those individuals picking up on a previous question who do not have access at home, obviously you can't be in school all the time and the access isn't great. Do they use libraries? Do they go to friends' houses? Because somehow you have to do your homework and somehow you have to perhaps apply for colleges and you can't do all of that. I know it's a challenge, but are there other places that people go, or do you think that we should have more access to the libraries or community technology centers, et cetera?
I believe that the community technology centers, as well as the libraries, would help students a lot more because, honestly, I cannot tell you how many students come in, miss, I did not hand in my project, I couldn't type it up on the computer. I didn't have internet connection, I couldn't do the research. So it's a big problem.
How did you know about the hearing today?
We actually received, and the principal, Deirdre DeAngelis, received an email, I suppose, and me and my friend Vanna were suggested to attend this morning.
Okay, you did read on the email. Was it sent to you by email, or were you approached?
It was sent to the principal by email, and she approached me about it.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Principal DeAngelis, chose very well.
Thank you.
I'd now like to call Michael Kress.
My name is Michael Kress. I'm the Vice President of Technology Systems at the College of Staten Island. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to share with you one of the very important projects that we're working on here at the college. We call this project Transforming Education Through Ubiquitous 21st Century Networking. The project's purpose is to develop a converged network service and applications platform that will network the campus and the surrounding Staten Island communities for the purpose of enhancing educational instruction and learning, not only for traditional students, but also to an expanded group of Staten Islanders. The system will use both broadband and wireless networks to enable ubiquitous access to the services and applications. In addition to the traditional students, the system will benefit returning veterans, Americans with disabilities, part-time workers, and persons seeking retraining for new jobs and advancement. It will reduce the congestion on the highways and reduce travel and have other additional benefits. This initiative will serve as a pilot for the City University of New York, for the nation, and for us as a whole in providing broadband resources for educational opportunities to communities and in collaboration with institutions of higher education. Essentially, what our program is doing is taking advantage of new technologies in streaming video, in distance learning technologies, and the like, and coupling those resources together with the administrative services that students need on a day-to-day basis, and providing that in a way that it's seamlessly accessible on campus and throughout the community. As you heard Professor Zhang speak earlier about that ferry boat, that's another example of where we feel that's part of our project. But we're also looking at the bus transportation key corridors so that the student can be connected at all times to the network. Thank you.
You have a minute left if you'd like to continue. Thank you, sir. Questions, Mr. Kress?
You indicate that there's a number of areas that you're going to be working with the surrounding communities. Many other speakers have mentioned funding. Are you developing a sustainability model in this project to address how it can continue?
Yes. A good portion of this project is to identify partnerships with businesses as well as governmental agencies to look at a model that has a cash flow associated with it, because certainly we would like it to be free for everybody. I think everybody always likes free. But I think we acknowledge that there is some overhead that other companies will have to incur. So part of our initiative is to do the research and understanding exactly what is the right business model that's affordable for the students that can make a benefit into the community at large and that really bring that new educational model to a broad spectrum of people. But there may be people that have a harder time handling the costs. For those people, we would have to address it in a very special way. And if you look at CUNY's mission throughout its time, it is never denied an educational opportunity to students for the sake of money. So I think that we'll work it out, but I think part of our initiative, as you read in my testimony, which I submitted, the finding the right business model, I think, is a good and very important first step.
Other questions?
Dr. Quest, I've long admired you from afar. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I wanted to understand better how you achieve this ubiquity. If by identifying hotspots that would be connected to your network, right?
That's correct. For example, the ferry boat, that's a perfect example. The corridors for the major bus routes. The mall's now becoming online. There's a hotspot there. That's another step. But it's about targeting the hotspot so that they have the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time. Also, you could target wireless environments in some places which are higher density concentrations and use models like they did in Philadelphia, where they provide wires of broadband access to an entire apartment house. That enabled you to do things that you could never do if you had to put all the wires in place. So it's about using strategic planning to approach the problem in an effective way. We could target New York. That's good idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. I now want to call Abdoulaye Ba from the Community News Production Institute.
Thank you so much for allowing me to speak here today. Again, my name is Abdoulaye Ba. Actually, I happen to be a former student of CSI, so it's an honor to be here today. And I work for the Community News Production Institute, which is also part of the People's Production House. And I work with many communities, mainly immigrant and low-income families. But I might not be actually talking a lot about those communities, but instead I will actually talk about myself regarding the kind of connection I have here on Staten Island because I live here on Staten Island. I'm a customer of Time Warner Cable, and it's been about 4 years or so since I subscribed to their service. So I get my internet, for example, costs around $50 a month. And I recently called up Time Warner Cable and told them that the $50 that I was being charged were too much. And if they were not going to give me a better deal, I was going to switch. So Time Warner said, okay, we are actually going to give you a better deal, and we want you to stay with us for 12 more months. I said, okay. So they said, we'll offer you $29.99, which is $30 a month. So the reason why I'm saying this to you, I'm saying this to everyone, but also to the committee, is to draw the attention to the cost of the service. Everyone here, who came before me had actually someone mentioned about the cost. If Time Warner Cable is able to offer me the same service that I was being charged for $50 for the past 3 years, why is it Time Warner Cable can't actually charge me the same $30 now on or even less? So I think it would be really interesting if with the work you do, can address that issue because, again, not just the immigrant community or low-income families, everyone in this city would like to have a service that costs less, at least if it's not free. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Bob?
Oh, I don't have a question, but I just have a statement. And that statement would be, there is a beauty in competition. And Verizon for a competition, full disclosure, my former employer, competition to Staten Island, and you will see improved service from Time Warner. And you will see costs going down because now they are no longer a monopoly. That's a reformed monopolist.
the telephone. I know from what I speak about. So I'm happy that your rates have gone down. They should go down all over the city once there is true competition here in the city of New York. And Gail Burwell, Councilman Walks Burwell, was one of the people who was instrumental in bringing competition to the city of New York by allowing Verizon to get a franchise to compete in the city of New York.
My question, Tom, is being a little generous. My question is, do you live in an area then, where there is competition? So was that a Time Warner versus Fios discussion? And then my second question would be, I know you didn't talk specifically about the immigrant community, but I would like you, if you don't mind, just to talk a little bit about how broadband could service that community.
First, with the first question, yes, we do have Verizon that recently started offering its Fios service. But there's a problem with that, actually. Although it's good to have another company offering the same service or even better, but I think the cost remains the same because what Verizon is offering, it's around the same price as Time Warner. So I think regardless of how many companies we have, if there's no policy on how to lower the cost, the issue will still remain the same thing. As for the immigrant community, where I live, for example, in the Stapleton area, I, for those who know Staten Island, I don't have to tell you how large the immigrant community is in that area. And I think if people have access to broadband, trust me, it can do a lot of stuff for them. One thing, for instance, I think that will do is to allow people to be able to call back home to stay in touch with their families or whoever they want to stay in touch with. Because once you have access to broadband internet, you can easily call, using many services that have been offered for a very cheap rate, for example, Skype, thank you, or many other services. So obviously if you have something like that, access to to broadband service, it will definitely do a lot for the immigrant community, but also for everyone that's in this city.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you so much.
Did that Skype plug come from Senior Gun? I would now like to call three people to the microphone, all of them from the New York Public Library, Marissa Parrish, Courtney Castellano, and Gary Miller.
I'm Marissa Parrish, the network manager for all the branches of New York Public Library here on Staten Island. I'd like to thank Councilmember Brewer and the distinguished members of the Broadband Advisory Committee and the Council Committee for all their continued support for the libraries and also for the opportunity to speak today. I can't talk tech either, but I can talk about all our library patrons that come to the branches in hundreds and hundreds, and they come to the library many times because it is the only place that offers free broadband internet access. From St. George to Tottenville, all of our branches have wireless service, and last year there were over 5,000 free wireless sessions in our branches. While some of our patrons don't have computer access at all, many of them that do have computer access don't have that broadband access, and that's why they come to our branches. And more patrons are able to get the information they need more promptly. People are coming in record numbers because, for example, at the Port Richmond branch, we have computer instruction in Spanish and English. We have computer instruction for seniors. At South Beach, there's going to be a workshop later in the month called Resumes That Break the Ice. There's also a Tottenville waiting list for basic computer training. And the librarian there tells me that a lot of young and older active adults who have been recently laid off come in because they have to learn the basic computer skills now in order to re-enter the job market. So we have staff in all of our branches on Staten Island that are trained to assist for job information. And with this limited time sessions that they have on the computers, it's very important that prompt free broadband access And that's very essential to all of our patrons. And the branches of Staten Island offer patrons computer assistance in so many ways for so many ages. And I have here also with me today Courtney Castellani, who is on the front line, at part of the branch team at the South Beach Library. And she's going to tell you a little bit about what she does for her younger patrons.
Thanks, Marissa. Again, my name is Courtney Castellani. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm a children's librarian trainee at the South Beach Library. I'm currently studying at Rutgers University to be a certified librarian. I work every day with the children and the teens that come into the library. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the situation in the elementary schools. In many K through 5 schools, they do not have media centers there. So more times than not, the only time these children have computer access is when they are coming into the library, because many of them do not have it at home. Moving on to the teens as well, we spoke to somebody from New York High School spoke. They don't have the broadband access there, so when they have to do their assignments and their schoolwork, they're coming into the libraries. Marissa touched upon the time session. They get only 45 minutes on the computers, and people are making appointments the day before all day. From the second we open to the second we close, there is somebody on those computers. With the time session, broadband is imperative because they're doing everything from printing out tax forms, looking for a job, emailing, you know, a family member to let them know they're okay, going on Medline to look up, you know, after they've just spoken to their physician. They're doing their homework. They're doing so much with that 45 minutes that if we did not have broadband, then they'd be lost because they'd be sitting there just waiting for something to download or waiting to connect. So, like Marissa touched upon, the libraries are one of the few places that people know. It's a matter of knowing. You know what I'm saying? The library is known for having the broadband access, and it's greatly appreciated and greatly utilized, and our patron would be lost without it. So,
thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Parrish or Ms. Castellani?
I think in every hearing that we've had over the past year or so, we've heard consistently, I think, the great work that the libraries are doing. And I think we will have to really try to figure out a mechanism to support what you're doing. What I do have is a question around, obviously, sort of your funding mechanism is very complicated, but what suggestions would you have to this committee as it relates to things that we can possibly do without sort of getting tangled into the your funding mechanism?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if I'm the best one to answer that. I think that we just really have to, I think we could always use really good promotion for all the services that we offer. I think that the case in point with the seniors, we know that they're going to be doubling the senior population by, I think it's in 10 years, where we're going to have the largest senior population of all the boroughs. We're doing more to work with them now and with all other kinds of groups that are underserved right now. And I think that's really very important that people know that the library has that broadband and that it's maintained and improved. I attended a similar conference in the Bronx. I was in the Bronx for 30 years in the libraries. And a few years ago at the Bronx Community, I attended a similar conference as this. And I'd just like to know that now, many years later, have improved and we're moving on and everyone, and we do get this free service for everybody. And, you know, hopefully that's really what I would like to see for all the branches and all the branches in all the boroughs.
A quick question. You have broadband access. These are dedicated computers. Do you provide wireless?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Courtney, if she can, she's just going to mention a little bit about the laptop use, which is crazy.
Yes, I actually work at the smallest branch on the island, so we only have 8 laptops there, but they are used by everybody. The teens especially, we have teen laptop time once a week where the teens could come in and not have to worry about schoolwork. Just sit there. As we know, social networking is a major trend on the rise, and they sit there, we provide music, they use the laptops, and we also have a lot of patrons that come in with their own laptops to utilize our broadband wireless. So we had like a day a couple weeks ago that it was down, and you would have thought what happened there. They heavily, heavily rely on us for our wireless broadband and also for our stationary computers. So.
Thank you.
No problem, thank you.
I understand the minority population in Staten Island is increasing, specifically the Latino population. I'm curious to find out what is the percentage of of users, of new users, Latinos in Staten Island, and what is the need, if there's a need in that population for your services?
Percentage-wise, I can't give you. I could follow up with that. I just know that that some areas it is a need that's current and it's immediate. It's right now, like in the Port Richmond area, and we're addressing that with bilingual programming. And ESOL, the English as a Second Language program, is alive and well in many branches, and it doesn't serve just the Hispanic population, but the Latinos. We're addressing all the different demographic changes with many programs that are geared to them. The percentage I'll get to
is that an increasing need?
Yes, I would say so.
Thank you very much. As Mr. Bell said, we so appreciate the library's testimony and all the hearings and just in general. I wish your libraries were open and the funding for 7 days a week, almost 24/7, to be honest with you. That's what you really need. My question is, we're trying to think, I think, as a committee and as a city, how to provide more technology services through these community technology centers, libraries, beacons, senior centers, etc. And I'm a proponent of books as well as computers like everybody else, and certainly like you. But do you think there's any way, and this is perhaps a very challenging question and I shouldn't be asking it, but is there any way that the libraries with appropriate funding could be open just for the technology more often, or do you think that would be contrary to what libraries are all about?
Well, of course, we're facing the possibility of having, decreased hours, and we're trying to fight that and maintain our six-day service, which is so important to all of us. When you mentioned seven-day, we're just struggling now with the impending cuts. But we are looking at all different scenarios, and we're looking at the possibility of having, you know, still having instruction, computer instruction still going on, and providing some services so that we can lessen the negative impact that the budget cuts may have on all of us. We are looking at that possibility of still providing as many of those services. We do lots of outreach to from all the branches. It is a concern for us, too.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'd now like to call Ben Torto from MST News.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Ben Torto. I'm the Vice President of Sales for Microwave Satellite Technologies and also MST. Our brand and trademark is New Visions. New Visions was established around 26 years ago, and we operate as a private cable operator. Some of that competition we heard of earlier, we are evidence of that. And we provide internet access. We're an ISP, television service, and digital telephone. We also operate a large Wi-Fi network in New York City and parts of New Jersey. That includes parts of Central Park, Dag Hammarskjöld Park, Riverside Park. We do it as an adjunct to the service that we provide to the buildings that we operate in, but we also are able to be a commercial internet service provider in those facilities, I mean, in those settings. I had a lot on in 3 minutes, just so I'm going to really try to abbreviate. Another very key element of what we do as an organization, we're a technology organization. We provide a solution that uses the electric lines of buildings to provide connectivity. It could be called a revolutionary technology, but it's really been around for 20 years. We've been using it adequately for 4 years, very successfully. And it allows you to cut the cost of wiring to bring connectivity for things like affordable broadband and other applications, including intercom technology for buildings, CCTV security, at a very affordable rate. We can cut the cost of wiring by 50%. If you look at the infrastructure of the buildings in New York City, you can see the fit, the natural fit for some of these barriers that were heard. Those would be physical barriers. In reading the overview that Council Member Gail Bruin had for this meeting, the word barrier was in there. I heard the word barrier here a lot today. We have heard. And New Visions represents an opportunity to remove the barrier, certainly a price point, as I'll discuss here, as well as technological barriers to provide broadband for some of the needs that we heard today. We're working currently with New York City Housing Authority, or NYCHA, on two exciting projects. One of them includes the BPL, the broadband over power line, that uses the electric lines I mentioned earlier. There, We are in proof of concept setting in Roosevelt House in Brooklyn. We're providing connectivity for things like closed circuit television and the intercom functionality of the building over the electrical lines. What's left to do now is to provide affordable broadband over the same infrastructure. So it's ready and waiting to do. You can have multiple applications in that setting, as I just mentioned. So there's an opportunity for us to break that barrier of price and technology. On Staten Island, we've embarked on a very exciting project at Toad Hill Houses, where we're providing our triple play services, including affordable broadband at a price point of $14.99 a month. So there, we're breaking down the barrier. To be honest with you, what we've counted thus far has been a less than stellar attraction by the residents to the service, and we're not sure, although today I think validates that some of that might be the fact that people don't actually have computers, let alone the cost to pay for the service. I think we're providing them the right service at the right price. We're working with organizations like Perscolas to try to work towards some programs that can help facilitate the adoption in those facilities. And I think sounds like I'm out of time. I would just say, with the stimulus funds and the activity that we're seeing with New York City Housing, we are definitely poised to assist in all realms of what I just discussed. We are here to remove the barrier. We have the technology and the wherewithal as an organization to invest in the buildings like we did at Toad Hill Houses and help remove that barrier. We are an act proponent and component of what you're trying to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Fortin?
What kind of, can you specify again the services that you are providing for the residents?
Yes.
And at what cost?
We're a dish television service provider, so all in one bill you can get out triple player services. So we provide dish television for as low as $33 for our base package. So again, in that building, you can enjoy television programming at $33. For a telephone, it's in the $29 range for unlimited use. And the broadband, as I mentioned, we have three tiers in that building, so if people want a little bit of a higher broadband speed, they can get it. But our lowest tier there is $14.99. So we are triple play provider in the residential setting. We're also, we have other services in the business settings.
Are they all coming through the same wire to the end user, or are they coming through different?
Good question. In that particular building, in Toad Hill Houses, New York City has had embarked on implementing an advanced telecom infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure of wiring, so that the wiring was there for us. So we are delivering our services over multiple methods to the environment. The television, for instance, goes over coaxial. The broadband in that building goes over coaxial, and the telephone over copper twisted pair. We bring our services to the building through multiple means, satellites, the television, terrestrial lines for the broadband and voice.
You mentioned that the adoption rate is not where you want to see it yet. And you mentioned that access to the computer, I didn't understand.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear enough. The adoption rate is low. And we've been active since September. We have approximately, call it 30 out of 500 units. We've worked closely with New York City Housing. We've worked closely with the Tenant Association. And even in spite of all that, we're not seeing people attracted to the service. There's some interest that people call. We don't think it's just an economic barrier. A $14.99 price point, we don't think it's that. So we're starting to wonder aloud that it might be that people don't have the computers. I think we heard today that that might be actually somewhat true.
Yes, just in terms of full disclosure, MST is one of two licensees that New York City Housing Authority entered into license agreement with to leverage the advanced cabling infrastructure that we installed in a portion of our development. Several of those developments are in Staten Island, and we, as part of the pilot, we have a state selected Toad Hill Houses, which I think has 500 of all units, approximately. And we've been working very, very closely. They're a terrific business partner, and very aggressively marketing and engaging with our residents. But after all, they are just service providers. And one of the thoughts that I myself had in terms of this lack of adoption, because the price point seems to be reasonable. The competition today a television house is Time Warner and possibly in the middle of Flowers, the price point here, very attractive. I mean, I wish I could get a price point. Right? But the problem, in my view, and it's substantiated by surveys that NYCHA did together with Diamond Consulting a year or so ago, is that there are inhibitors beyond just the price, and that is the provisioning of the PC and the training. And to that extent, we've encouraged all our licensees, including MSP, to try to partner up with CBLs like the Solos and others to try to present a full package of services to our residents in the hope that we can increase that. But we're working very closely. So we're supporting this past month, our general manager sent a letter to each of the Tarradillo residents together with their monthly billing statement, encouraging them to take a look at this package being offered as an option. And again, in terms of making this available to our residents, we agree, as Tom Dunn said, competition is a wonderful thing. So we've also partnered up with Verizon and Fios is being installed at Bailey houses as we speak and will be likely extended to other developments because we really believe that as long as you have multiple service options, the prices ultimately will drop. The key is how do we address this challenge of packaging, full package for the residents.
I'm curious, is that there were DSL and cable internet access being offered in the townhouse houses before the company entered?
Absolutely, yes. And this was an RFP process that we went through with New York City Housing. And we were, that's why I used the word invest earlier, we were willing and able to invest and bring our services here to compete with the incumbents.
I'd like to just expand upon what Avi was saying. In my organization, we've done essentially the same thing. We found the exact same challenges. And having worked through this committee, we've come out with essentially three main inhibitors. Price for the service, the cost or the actual equipment, and training. And I can tell you that there is a very strong relationship between having a higher take rate, if you will, for tenants or residents who actually have computers. And when we're able through Proscolis, and I'm not plugging them, so for the record, but through Proscolis, we're able to provide low-cost computers to those residents. We're able to actually have them subscribe, so I think there's a lot there. I've been taking some notes, and I think I lost track of how many times people said cost, which is key. But cost means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So one of the things that I think we'll have to kind of get is a good gauge of what cost really means. And I think $14.99 is exactly what we charge. And in some circles, that's a great price. I'm not sure if that's the only inhibitor to a lot of people, but we know for sure what we continue to hear repeatedly, it's cost of access, the hardware, and training. So I think that's something that we have to continue to really examine. So that's just sort of my piece on this.
Thank you. We agree with you on the training, and that's why we're leaning on a division like Proscolis. Also, that's what we're going to call One Economy that does the training piece as well as some equipment.
Other questions?
Just wanted to thank you and also just mention that we heard Wi-Fi mentioned a lot here today and just to resubmit that not only we would like to be active with the city supporting the activities that we talked about with buildings like Toe Hill and New York City Housing, but we also have the opportunity and capability to expand the use of wireless through our capabilities and our network that is in place. So something just to put on the table. We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you,
Mr. Porter. I'd now like to call Paula Coyle from SIEDC.
Good afternoon. My name is Paula Coyle. I'm membership director for the Staten Island Economic Development Corporation. We are a leading business assistance organization, a nonprofit on Staten Island. In 2007, some of you might be familiar, we commissioned a study from the Center for an Urban Future. It was entitled Staten Island 2020, and it laid out 14 recommendations to assist the borough in maximizing its economy by the year 2020 and also creating a better quality of life for its residents. Two of the recommendations I just want to briefly mention now, one directly related to broadband and wireless, which is to get wireless on the ferry boats and in the terminal. This was recommended both as a benefit for the for the commuter, but also as a way to do what we always grapple with on Staten Island, which is get those tourists off the boat and get them, you know, to the local attractions and boost the local economy. And we thought wireless on the boat, complemented with the right kind of advertising and promotion, could link them up with our local tourist organization, SINY. So that was one recommendation. The second one, which seemingly is unrelated to broadband, is to make every effort possible to reach out to the immigrant and minority business community and to assist them in the obstacles and the challenges that they face in starting and growing their businesses. And having done this for a brief while, I can tell you the greatest impediment to reaching out to this population and trying to incorporate them into the greater business community on Staten Island is the lack of internet access and broadband access that is endemic in those communities, which traditionally are lower income communities and don't have the access that our more affluent communities do. We could be doing so much more in business assistance and training and just networking with these entrepreneurs if we had that kind of access for them in their communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Coyle?
Yeah. Is there any specific efforts going on in Staten Island to reach out to those communities that have been identified in this report that you are aware of?
I missed your first word. Is there any...
any specific efforts that are going on right now to address the second recommendation?
I can only speak for our agency, and we are trying to work with local community groups that have relationships with these communities and reaching out to them, and also partnering with business assistance groups, one of which we already have done, which is members of SCORE, which are here in front of them. Thank you. But also, SIDC, a lot of SIDC's funding comes from member groups, and they're paid member groups. This year, we're establishing a free member group for immigrant and minority entrepreneurs. It's just being formulated now. It really hasn't been promoted, but it's going to be marketed heavily at our April conference, our April Business Conference. And so, we are making every effort possible. I can't speak for any other group on the island.
Yeah, I just wanted to make you aware that there are some projects that are being undertaken to provide some services to especially Latino businesses online and in an effort to try to reach the maximum number of potential beneficiaries of this service. So I'd like to talk to you later about that.
Please, I know I have some brief contact with El Centro de Hospitalidad in Port Richmond, which deals with the Latino immigrant community, and they're working with us at our April conference. Again, it's a large business-to-business conference, about 2,500 attendees, and we're having a segment this year specifically on immigrant entrepreneurs, Making an Impact, it's called. We have a speaker. Many of you may know Yankee Shearing is coming, and we hope to, really address this issue there at that forum. So I'll leave my contact information.
I have a question. If you had your best dreams realized, I think what you would want would be to have not just the competition, which we've heard about in terms of Fios and cable, but also some free wireless so that some of your communities, businesses, et cetera, could have access. So in general, have you made applications for that? Are you thinking about a strategy from the federal government? We're delighted to have you here, and thank you for your testimony, because I think it highlights what we all are trying to achieve. And I'm just wondering, what's your game plan to try to make it a reality?
I don't know if our organization is best equipped, technologically speaking, to do just that. But we would certainly be willing to lend our efforts. We do have expertise in grant writing and networking and things like that. We have great relationships with our elected officials. So while we might not be spearheading any effort, I would hope that whoever it is might involve us in reaching out.
Yeah, I just
curious. I mean, it's funny, when we started this commission, it was a different economy. Things have turned around 180 degrees. We hear the word free access, we hear the word free computers. This is the economy of today. And I guess, listening to a report from the Urban Center, who I'm very familiar with, and having a fellow Community Development Corporation, was there anything to address a business model that would look to create any type of revenue from Staten Island Ferry so that it could sustain itself, as opposed to us trying to always get free service?
I can't speak to that. I know that there has been, I'm only relaying information that I received from Captain DeSimone at the Staten Island Ferry. I know there's been talk about wireless, and I know there's been some assessments done by companies on how to equip the boats in the ferry terminal. Whether or not that's revenue generating, I don't know. And we don't have anything in place right now. When we think about the ferry, honestly, a lot of times we think about tourism dollars and the empty retail spaces there that everyone is very angry about. Again, not necessarily with the broadband wireless model.
My understanding from other cities and transit systems around the world that have put Wi-Fi on ferries and trains is that you need to look at it in a larger regional transportation picture, because every person that gets on transit because of the wireless that doesn't get in the car has real, that's a real dollar value in terms of congestion. So it's a little abstract, but.
Thank you for answering the question.
I guess the bigger question is how do we begin to take some of these ideas and bring them to the market, make the market assume some of the risk and some of the cost. I think that's just part of the discussion.
Right, and I can take that back to my organization, and I don't know, I don't think there's any plan afoot right now, but I don't think it's anything that we would be averse to. And it might be, some food for thought as we plan our new projects and things like that.
Thank you.
One final question. From your organization, have you conducted any sort of a needs assessment as it relates to the businesses, specifically what they would like to see in terms of the broadband and other types of platforms, and also do you have a sense of how many businesses are actually in need of these types of services?
We have not done anything like that, no. I regret to say.
A follow-up question related to what Bill has mentioned. How many of these businesses are home-based businesses as opposed to retail office businesses?
Well, let me stress too that we have just started trying to do this. So we rely on community groups to get us in front of people. So we don't have any formalized membership list. We don't have any formalized client list yet. And so I can't really say who's out of their home and who's not. I would imagine, though, that any business starts in a home at some point, researching and networking and that kind of thing.
Thank you very much. I'd now like to call Beverly Newhouse from Richmond Senior Services.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I'm Beverly Newhouse, Executive Director of Richmond Senior Services, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the low-income seniors and disabled persons on Staten Island. Our services focus on their housing needs. And our services include affordable housing, accessibility modifications, emergency home repairs to the elderly, the homes of the elderly, and minor health and safety repairs. Through these programs, I frequently speak with and visit the homes of seniors and disabled persons, and know that they have great difficulty in meeting their expenses and can barely afford to pay their utility bills and purchase food, let alone meet the costs of computers and broadband services. They are often isolated from the socialization we all enjoy, and they cannot access information on the services they require to meet their daily needs. They are, in other words, out of the loop. Having broadband services would open up their worlds. On today's communication superhighway, they're still driving a Model A Ford. They don't have the means to communicate quickly and easily with family members living at a distance. They can't see their children and grandchildren on Facebook, and they remain lonely and uninformed. Most of us here today can't imagine not having email or checking the local news or visiting sites that can explain our medical conditions or the state of the economy or the up-to-date election results. They can't participate in chat rooms, and some of the things have become the norm for all of us. That's exactly where so many of our seniors and homebound disabled persons are. While our worlds expand beyond what we could have imagined only a few years ago, theirs is shrinking. Where we can learn and fill our minds with the knowledge that keeps us vibrant and alive, they are left with little to stimulate them. We know that exercising our minds is necessary to maintain a healthy mind, but we leave our elderly and disabled persons without the very basics they need. We can go out to a movie or visit the library or go to a historic site or social event. They must face the same walls each day without the financial means to attend those events and unable to reach out through the electronic system that has enabled the rest of the world to thrive. Think about how confined you may have felt in the recent snowstorm that you couldn't leave your house quickly and get where you needed to go. And on top of that, an inability to check your email, surf the internet, go to your BlackBerry, or go to your favorite chat room, and now multiply that by 365 days a year, just this year, and imagine what it's like to be confined every day without the means to reach out. The cost of providing broadband service is relatively minimal when compared to the results of isolation and lack of knowledge. A program to provide equipment and staffing, and perhaps community volunteers such as B. Victor talked about earlier through the SeniorNet program, would go a long way to address the needs of seniors, to make that equipment available, to teach them how to use the internet, and to open up their world. And I urge some funding to meet the needs of our most vulnerable populations so they can bring about some positive changes in their lives.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Dennis?
Thank you for your testimony. Do you work with a group called OATS, O-A-T-S? Have you ever heard of them?
No.
Okay, we will provide that information because they're groups that work with seniors in the home, seniors in the center, doing some of the discussion that you would like. And second, I know that there is possibility in this very challenging economy of more intergenerational funds between the Department for Youth and Community Development and the Department for the Aging. So you can have the amazing students from New Dorp to work with some of your seniors. So I urge you to kind of think along those terms, and we'd be glad to work with you.
Right. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Thank you. I'd now like to call Michael DeVito from NYCLD.
Good day. I'm Michael DeVito from the New York Center for Interpersonal Development. We are a nonprofit organization that works in conflict resolution and youth development. I suppose I'm here today to just talk about the number of schools here on Staten Island. We are present in some four high schools and about seven public schools. And often we find a challenge keeping our systems up and running. We're very lucky to have the funding for sophisticated computers and whatnot, but then when we get to the building, we find that most of the wiring systems are outdated, so our internet and our services are sometimes rendered useless for a few days until we can get things working again and figure out what the problems are and where the wiring is fouling up. So that's really all I have to add.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Mr. DeVito?
Schools are supposed to be better than that. What do you do when you have that problem? Does the school recommend a hotline? Is there an on-site tech person? How do you handle that?
We have both. There are on-site tech people, and it depends. It does depend on the school. For example, one of the older schools, Staten Island Tech, Technical High School, we were in that building for about 2 years, and it was a constant struggle with the internet staying up. And the only recourse really was to reach out to that individual who would reset the system or look to see where the problem was and then try to, you know, try to create a plan to fix it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd now like to call, I can't see if it's Daniel Coates or Gates from Make the Road.
Hi, it's Coates. Let's see. I'm going to use my technologically advanced BlackBerry that I have the notes put on. So thank you very much for hearing my testimony today. As a brief introduction, I work for Make the Road New York. We are the city's largest membership-based immigrants' rights organization with over 5,000 dues-paying members with three offices, and one in Brooklyn, one in Queens, and the smallest one in Staten Island. So broadband in our work, personally as an organization, I think we've heard a lot from different folks here. I'm not going to say anything that's particularly new, but for anybody who's trying to coordinate multiple sites, broadband is absolutely essential. There was a period where we were using dial-up in the Staten Island office a couple of years ago, and it was impossible to do any work. So in that sense, as a nonprofit organization, absolutely essential. In terms of our membership, the community that we're serving in Staten Island, we provide health and legal services as well as a pretty robust series of English classes, starting from basic English learning and literacy, folks who are illiterate, up to pretty advanced English. Every year we probably have about between 400 and 600 students in three schools. Our members are between 95% and 99% Latino immigrants, overwhelmingly from Mexico. We are on Port Richmond Avenue. The three things that we hear from our members are, first, folks can't get access to broadband service because of either the costs are too high, they don't have a credit card, so they can't set it up, or they are unclear about what the cost structure are going to be, so they sign up for something and they end up being asked to pay a lot more than they initially expected to. And the third part of it is, echo what Reverend Ryan said in the beginning, is just a lack of knowledge about how to use the computer. We do provide computer classes in our Queens office. I think they would be incredibly, incredibly useful for the Staten Island office as well. People, folks just don't know how to write an email, don't know how to turn a computer on. It's computer phobia. It's also desire, but just a lack of knowledge. In terms of recommendation, I'm going to echo what a lot of folks up here said before. Funding. We would love to be able to provide these classes. We've got a limited number of laptops, but we just don't have the capacity.
And we'll have to keep it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Coates?
Thank you very much for all your work. My question is, I know you have the same list of barriers that others do. Would there be some benefit in the libraries being open, community training centers, some of the things I talked about earlier as a broader policy? Obviously, we have to make sure that everybody's assisted, your clients and others. And I just want to know if you could think of a broader scheme that might make sense. I was just wondering what it might be.
Yeah, I think in terms of a broad approach to this sort of a thing, using existing networks and existing centers as much as possible that folks go to for other reasons would be a good way to start. I know a lot of our members don't think about, you know, oh, if only I could use the computer and have access to all this information out there. It's, I need to learn English so that I can get a job. And then at this place that I go to, oh, they also happen to have computers, sort of a thing. So as much as it's possible to use centers that are doing food pantries or other sorts of things as the locations where folks are getting access to that sort of education, I think the better.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. In our experience, and that's been proven by research, about 55% of Latinos are not online. Based on new members, how many of them are on online right now?
I would say less than the 55% that that you're citing. Probably 20 or 25. I would say that's about the rate of folks having internet in their homes as well. And we have a lot of people coming in to ask us to do, you know, can you help me get on the internet, et cetera, et cetera. But as a percentage of our membership in Staten Island, it's probably about 20-25%. And across the board in Queens and Brooklyn, it's probably similar.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now I can call Wayne Roy of Troy.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I'm Wayne Roy. I'm the CTO of Troynet. We're a technology solution provider for our business in New York and on a large scale for K-12 education in New York, New Jersey, and D.C. We do project management, design, install, configuration, and support for computer network systems. So we're the guys that actually come in and have to deal with getting the internet up and running, you know, in their business as well as in education. I'm going to lead with education, first because that's our biggest vertical, and second because I have three children, and about 7 days I have my fourth coming. I have a vested interest in education. We work a lot with schools, and what we found is connectivity is very, very important. We do a lot with video on demand, communal schools communicating back and forth with each other. We deal a lot with creative technology with VoIP, which is a voice over IP phone systems. We deal a lot with wireless in schools and actually getting on the internet. It's a primary key thing for schools as well as for most businesses that we deal with is internet. Our company itself would not function if we didn't have some type of internet provisioning for our company. And I would say 80% of our work we do is via the internet connected to our clients and actually being able to establish things. Going back to schools, we deal with the SIS system, which is hosted for schools. They have to go through the internet to actually get to the student information system. The student information system tracks the student from the day they get into school till they're ready to move over to college, and it's transferable from school to school. They need a good structure to facilitate that ability to bring that information from one school to the other school. They need the ability to be able to get on the internet, get information. I know the committee started doing the webcast. Schools also doing that type of thing where they have content and they're making it available to all the schools. The biggest problem is schools can't afford the internet access. Most of them, I would say 85 schools we work with get funding through E-rate. That's the only way they're able to afford internet service. Okay. It's the only way they can afford internet services. My comment on internet access itself and what some of the issues are, first and foremost, what I see preventing it, it's not enough infrastructure in less affluent neighborhoods. In poor neighborhoods, it's very difficult to get proper service in those neighborhoods, from my perspective in dealing with it. Cost as well. When I say cost, not just afford making it affordable, but giving quality with it. I see a lot of providers say it's cheaper what you get. When I use it on my side to support that people complain about it not working, it's because the provisioning, because it's so cheap, there's no QoS behind it. There's nothing worthwhile, no foundation for it. But having something cost effective and valuable and making it available in all neighborhoods, not specific neighborhoods, is very important.
Thank you, sir. Questions from Mr. Ryan?
Where do you get your workers from, the people that install these networks and all around making sure they're working?
Our employees?
Yeah.
You just go on the internet. We put out an ad on the internet, and that's how they found us.
I'm just curious, like, what what kinds of access to technology they had when they were growing up. Because I think of all the kinds of initiatives that we're thinking potentially about here, there's this huge workforce training opportunity as we design and build and operate these things. It'd be interesting to explore someone who's actually doing it. You know, what are the problems? Where do people get the training they need to come work for something like that?
Gotcha. Actually, a lot of people pull on board. Just to give you my background, I actually graduated from the school. I have a Bachelor of Science in Engineering from the school. A lot of the guys we bring on board, we train most of the people we have, but a lot of them go out to get their certification. Most of the time, the certification you get, online training. okay, for MCSC, CCNA. By the way, I believe Mamadou Ndao, that's my senior engineer. Okay, I believe you have a comment.
Yes, what I wanted to say is like I graduated from CSI, with a bachelor in computer science and also a master's in computer science, and I'm presently his senior engineer. But before, I studied the internet in my country, which is Senegal in West Africa, in 96. And some of the comments that I'm hearing, I'm kind of like, no, I'm dreaming. I'm sitting here and hearing the problem is the cost of computers. In 99, before I left, because I came here in 99, I had a program to start using set-top box that would connect your TV to have internet access. So sometimes when I hear the problem is the computer, I'm like, but there are solutions out there that people that can afford a computer with $200 or sometimes even with some program with the $100 computer that they have sometime in Africa, why not use that over here for senior citizens, for high schools, and eventually give people some computers that are only P3 that they can use for the internet. For some immigrant in Senegal, I have a program which is like a video phone that they can use to see their family members back home. And at the same time, what I discovered, some of the parents that are not impaired, they can ask their kids to take the homeworks, show it on the video to somebody like me that can help them with their homeworks because their parents cannot help them. So there are solutions out there. Once the broadband is available, I can guarantee you people will use it.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Trey. Our next speaker is Nikki Odlevac of the Community Agency for Senior Citizens.
Hello. Councilwoman Brewer, thank you for your work on this. But even more importantly for me and my agency, thank you for your work on the Aging Committee. I'm actually going to give some comments. I have no written statement, but I have some comments in terms of aging and seniors. My colleague, Joe Tornello, who is the CEO of Meals on Wheels on Staten Island, has to leave for an appointment, and he has some talking points as well. CAS, Community Agency for Senior Citizens, has been around since 74. And because of capital funding that we received from our late Assemblyman Lavelle, John Lavelle, we were able to network in 2004. And I have to stress that because we were way behind the times when we finally became networked. However, we also have people who are off-site. We have 4 senior centers that we are sponsoring, and we have 3 case managers in 3 housing sites who are not connected in our network. We've heard about cost, and certainly it's one thing to get the hardware and the equipment, and then it's another thing to maintain it. And that is a cost that nonprofits have difficulty across the board. From a personal note, my mother, I really appreciate B. Victor. My mother, who will be turning 80, was absolutely against any kind of computer, even though we kept encouraging her to consider taking a class. Also a nurse, who was constantly looking up in her journals and her medical books all about medical diseases for her, my father, who's going to be 85, and the rest of the friends and family, you know, across this country. She, because of a young man who moved in next door to her and who's very computer literate, she finally became a little bit, you know, he gave her the old Mac that he was getting rid of and started teaching her in a very, probably much easier way than her own daughters could have done. And now my mother, yes, sir. Now my mother actually is going on the internet, and she loves it. And she keeps in communication with her daughters in Montana and New York, as well as family and friends across this country. My mother drives and she gets out. By the way, she lives in Chicago. She drives, she gets out, she's not isolated, but this has put her in a whole nother world of information and education. And we can't stress that enough of how important it is. It is the new isolation for the senior. It is the new isolation, not having the internet access. I want to say something about our senior centers. DPTA did have a collaboration with Time Warner Cable, and sometime around 2003, 2004, every senior center across the city was given an email address and had internet access. But that's kind of where it ended. Our own people put in routers to connect 1 to 4 more computers, but we certainly do not have the money to create little computer labs, which is really the next thing we need to do for our members. Because the seniors who do come to the centers, many are interested. Once you have a small group who begin to learn, brand new, have no knowledge, then they entice the others who may have been even more fearful to come and consider doing this. I want to say something about Access New York City.
We're actually going to have to cut that there, but perhaps that will come out in some of the questions. Thank you very much. Are there questions for Ms. Ogilvie?
What were you going to say
about Access New York City? Thank you very much. The number expected in Access NYC was giving away computers, and of course we were positive. The number that they expected to sort of filter through the site was too much for the senior centers, at least the ones I think on Staten Island, in order to access those computers. So we hit the roadblock there. I just want to say to the NYCHA, the gentleman from NYCHA, I mean, out of the 9 NYCHA sites on Staten Island, 8 have senior centers in their buildings. And I know nothing about the Friendship Clubs besides who runs them. But if they have this broadband access at Toad Hill and Berry Homes, I would hope that there would be some kind of computer lab set up in those senior centers, perhaps provided by NYCHA funding. And yes, I know that you guys have problems too with your budget. But you know, here you're having this broadband access in your Toad Hill and Berry Homes, and it's like a perfect fit for providing a small lab at those senior centers.
If I may. So we actually work really hard on the senior centers, particularly in areas where Time Warner has a franchise, because part of it, and I don't want to miscast this, but part of our understanding that came with the existing franchise agreement is that we were able to put internet access through the Time Warner Cable modem in many of the senior centers.
I think across the city, Friendship Clubs as well as our 4 centers as well have I can only speak for Staten Island Roadrunner email account. But, which was great. That was the first step. We need to build on to it. Education is absolutely the most important thing with seniors. Not the broadband cost, quite frankly. If you can't get them to feel at ease to turn on the computer, what's the matter with the broadband cost? And anyways, that broadband should be free in senior centers.
Questions? Thank you, Ms. Ogilvie.
Okay.
I'd now like to call Kaiser Kleinman from the Jewish Community Council of Coney Island. From whom I think we heard when we were in Brooklyn, yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Kaiser Kleinman. I'm the Chief Information Officer of the Jewish Community Council, and I run the nonprofit health desk, which has worked over the last 2 decades with approximately 800-plus organizations throughout the city. And I've watched a lot of the technology changes and tried to make them work for us. Now, before I get to my written testimony, I'd like to just comment on a few things that came up in prior testimonies, and I will make it quick. Firstly, in terms of the ease of use issues, I think it's a huge issue, and I do have to say that I must commend the Access NYC folks.
This has to be one of the best thought out sites that I have seen. It's in several languages. I've talked to people who read those other languages, and they tell me that, yeah, the translations are actually pretty good. And it really is easy to use, it's very focused, and it really is, you know, talking to our staff who've been using Access NYC with our seniors, it really, it's nice. It really, and I can't get better than that. It really is great. Secondly, in terms of seniors, and this is something I can speak to personally because my mother's a senior and she's got friends, as well as my work for the JCC, which does a lot of senior access. This was something I did ask about. Having home access is a big issue because a lot of seniors are, if not technically homebound, they can be homebound much more easily than, right, you know, other people, bad weather or something, will shut them in their homes much more easily. Having the internet access at home is a huge step in the right direction. Somebody asked about cell phones for students. Well, this is a cell phone, okay? Even if the entire screen was full, you can't really do an assignment, read a three-page article or whatever on a cell phone the way you can on a computer. Cell phones are great for mobile access, but they don't really replace a computer with even a 9-inch screen, which isn't big, but there's just no comparison, especially since most sites are not designed for the small form factor. Okay. Somebody had mentioned, you know, the issue of telecom reliability. Okay. We have a VoIP system. We go down, we're out of business. So we actually use T1 plus POTS lines because otherwise we're out of business. Okay, now to my written testimony. I'll have to do a little skipping. Staten Island has a growing population, according to the Census Bureau, 8.8% from 2000 to 2007. When populations grow, grow not at the same rate, but exponentially. So a lot of the issues that have been talked about really, really are more so than they look like they would be 2 years ago because of the growth. Combine that with the economic changes we've dealt with and with the growth in how everything is on the web, which is pretty much a good thing because a lot of things that weren't possible are now possible, but it means that those who don't have access are far more disadvantaged than they were 2 years ago. It's a huge issue. There are, as noted, still people and organizations that are broadband, not on broadband, and it's really, really hurting them. And for a lot of these places, it's not, and quite a few organizations primarily, it is not a matter of education. It's budget, it's dealing with, you know, all sorts of ancillary issues. Okay. Two issues that crop up is that, number one, the studies, for instance, there's a great map that you have that shows wonderful access all over Staten Island. It's not really true, in that there are pockets and places where you either can't get access, even though, you know, it's it, and B, where you can't get low-cost access. In other words, you've got to pay $500, $600 for a T1 line rather than $70, $80 for a DSL or cable line. Makes no sense. Huge issue. And you can't tell organizations, well, move to where there's better. They're community-based. They're rooted in the community. They move, their mission disappears. And anyway, you know, it's going to happen. We need to deal with this. So it's a huge, huge issue. There's got to be some push to get access into these pockets and to get it done affordably. One other point is, okay, last point, yes. For organizations to make the most effective use of broadband, people need to have access. Because if as a school or an organization trying to provide education, advocacy, whatever it is, I can have the greatest website in the universe. If my constituents can't get to it because they don't have access, then it doesn't help anybody. So it's a two-way street, and to be effective, we need to get access to both individuals and organizations.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Klein?
I'm sorry to harp on this issue, but you brought it up again. About T1s versus DSLs,
right,
critical services. What's the reliability difference between the two, in terms of uptime? What's the risk you're taking if you go with the DSL?
Well,
business-grade DSL.
Yeah, business-grade DSL. If you're talking about a static DSL line, for instance, your risk level is very low. I have to tell you something funny. We, for years, the only thing we could get was static DSL, which for us wasn't really enough because we needed a higher bandwidth.
But we actually had less downtime with our SDSL line than with our first T1 provider, even though officially we had an SLA. The only reason we stayed with the T1 provider is because we needed the higher speed that was available. But stability and quality of service on business-grade lines can be high enough that for many, many purposes, it really, really is good enough. You know, for our phone lines, it's not good enough mostly. Although, again, I was saying something interesting. Our T1, we have 5 centers on our VoIP system. Our T1, we have 3 SDSL lines and 1 T1. Oddly enough, our T1 has gone down more than the other 3 DSL lines put together. Because of the locations, now I can't really blame the provider. Partly it's the location, they're right off the beach, and that creates some issues with the copper that's coming in. But the point is, very, very often, the lower cost service is good enough, the occasional hour outage isn't gonna kill the business, and it's not worth the extra $400 a month. It just doesn't make sense.
Other questions?
Thank you for all your work.
Thank you very much. I would then next like to call Vincent Lenza of Staten Island NFP Association.
Good afternoon. My name is Vincent Lenza, and I am the executive director of the Staten Island NFP Association, which is an organization that counts 110 of Staten Island's not-for-profit organizations as members. In my work with these organizations, I've come to gain an understanding of the tools and strategies that they need to utilize to fulfill their missions of providing valuable service and important contributions to our community. While many people understand the importance of planning, implementing, and sustaining programmatic efforts, they may not appreciate the extent to which technology, specifically access to broadband connections, is incorporated into the successful management of a not-for-profit organization. As is the case in any industry, the ability to quickly and effectively send and receive information is a critical component of the work that Staten Island's not-for-profits do to keep their stakeholders engaged and informed. The importance of having access to effective communication technology is hard to overstate. As we all know, email has become the default means of communicating among leaders in almost all fields, the not-for-profit sector being no exception. Event notices and confirmations are, at many organizations, managed online, and an ever-increasing percentage of corporations and foundations now accept funding requests exclusively via online application processes. Having a modern, mission-driven web presence is, for almost all not-for-profits, an absolute necessity. And this year, all not-for-profits that have revenues of less than $25,000 will be required to file an electronic compliance form with the IRS. In addition, access to new communications technologies can translate into direct cost savings for not-for-profit organizations charged with navigating these difficult economic times, from telephone and web conferencing services to automated climate control systems and shared virtual and off-site computing. The list of cost-saving opportunities that are contingent on access to modern communication technologies is extensive. Of course, all these opportunities and activities are tied directly to the capability of organizations to access high-speed broadband connectivity. We are fortunate that most of Staten Island's not-for-profit organizations have the opportunity to access broadband connections at their place of business. Many of them actually enjoy a choice of provider, as we've been talking about today. This access and choice has been a great benefit to these organizations, and we look forward to continuing to helping these important community partners continue to provide the services and programs that add so much to our borough's vibrancy. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Lenz?
If the prior speaker of the ACC, she just left, indicated shockingly there are numerous not-for-profits to not have access. Is that your experience?
It is not. I'm not sure. I can speak to. I don't know which organization she's referring to. I do know that some of our small organizations, our volunteer-led organizations, for instance, may not have access because of some of the other issues that we're talking about today, whether they're volunteer-led or led by people who just choose not to have access. But in my experience, I have not run into anyone who just, you know, wants the service but cannot access it.
Thank you.
Other questions? One personal plug: on April 20th, the School of Public Affairs will be releasing a population projectable study of nonprofits and their technology usage. Right now, we are finding relatively low incidence of non-broadband access for organizations, but we'll have all the stats out shortly. Thank you, sir. I would now like to call Valerie D'Angelo.
Good afternoon.
I'm a Macaulay Honors College student here at the College of Staten Island. I'm an engineering major, and I have a couple minors with that, too. But broadband is really important for me as a student, especially in my field, because I need to keep up on the newest technology out. I need to know what publications have been released with the journals, especially when I'm doing research papers. And broadband gives me the access to do that as soon as possible. If my teachers need to get in contact with me or have any information about speaking at a hearing or just other things that are going on around the college, that's how they let me know and that's how I get involved. My internship program, I found out and applied right through the internet. I interned at MTA Bridges and Tunnels, had the most amazing experience of my life, and that all was possible because of broadband. In one of my classes last semester, I was actually able to have a class with Turkey, with the college students from Turkey. And it was really interesting to see how alike they are with us, and the stuff that they're learning is a lot like the stuff that we're learning here. And through the College of Staten Island Library, we were actually able to talk to them, speak with them, and it was really cool. But especially for a college student and any student, even if you're in high school or grammar school, this is what's going to keep you on top of things, and this is what's going to get you interested in your field and keep you learning. And I really think that's one of the most important things that broadband can do for you.
Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Yashua?
First of all, thank you. Macaulay's in my district on the west side. So have you been there to 67th
Street? I took a class there last semester.
Very cool, right?
Yeah, it is.
The question I have is, again, some of your colleagues spoke earlier, but here at the college, what percentage do you think have access at home? And also, if you are from Staten Island, what happened in your high school? We're trying to figure out this divide between school and work and what we can do to address it.
I think a lot of people, I know all the people I know, have access to internet at home. So I think it's at least half, if not more. And as far as schools, I went to St. Johnville Academy for high school. We had a computer lab that had access to internet where we took all our classes, and our library was too. The whole school wasn't wired for wireless, though. It was mainly on the main computers, and I think that's because they didn't want us bringing our laptops in and going on computers.
Just curious, how old were you when you first touched a computer keyboard?
I'd say about 8 or 9.
Really?
Yeah, I was young.
Good.
How old were you?
Still reading books, I hope, right?
Yes. A lot of them on the internet.
Other questions? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I would now like to call Louis Klubner.
Yes.
Louis Klubner, please, Mr. Klubner.
You should have some handouts as well. There's a written copy. And I'm just going to buzz through this quickly and do the questions. Thanks for this opportunity. The last mile or last 100 feet of connectivity is, as we all know, a capital intensive process, regular cables through conduits and boring holes in buildings, pushing wires through walls and other physical challenges. There's an overlooked aspect involving the regulatory and legal environment. And the hurdles involved in community associations or nonprofit groups enabling last mile access. My goal today is to address these issues, in particular the DOT and DOIT policies regarding franchises and revocable consent. Suggest that we establish a tenant's right to connectivity and make the best use of our public resources in order to do so. I've prepared these recommendations with community associations, nonprofits, and cooperative slash condominium style ownership models in mind. I believe the introduction of nonprofit wire speed networks in New York City would bring about significant social and economic benefits, as everyone has testified prior to this. While there's a citywide initiative underway to bring high-speed connectivity to all New York over the next 7 years, which could easily turn into 10 plus years, I'm of the belief that this citywide initiative should not be permitted to stifle the ability for local communities to address their own unique problems with their own creative solutions. According to my calculations, a non-commercial nonprofit community networking initiative which amortizes its construction expenses over 5 years, to provide gigabit speed connectivity for $20 a month for the first year, ending at $8 a month in the fifth year. Since the majority of the network expenses are incurred up front at the time of construction, it seems sensible that the subscription costs would decline over time as the initial investment was paid off. DOT revocable consent process, permission needed to install cables in the streets of New York, as it currently operates, takes 46 months to complete and costs between $300 and $750 per application. I spoke with the DOT representative and informed me that nonprofit organizations, which don't own real estate, who wish to undertake community networking initiatives are ineligible to apply for DOT consent, that only individual building owners and or their authorized tenants are eligible. Requiring individual tenants or their building owners to apply individually imposes a potentially stifling hurdle on both the community networks and the workload associated in the DOT. The DOIT franchise process has been geared towards very large entities providing citywide or borough-wide service for the most part. I think DOIT should consider the ability to have a franchise process that's geared towards community groups and associations. So the letter of the law in terms of franchise applications that DOIT is supposed to issue RFP before anyone can propose something. In the last 2 years, we've really only had, to my knowledge, an RFP for pole top installations when wireless was everything, and a cable TV franchise. The tenants' right to connectivity, a majority of New York City residents and businesses rent within a building, and to obtain street-level access in order to meet a network provider or a community networking initiative requires them to individually negotiate with their landlords, which is a lengthy and difficult process that most people don't even try to embark on. If there's a clearly defined right to access the street, then anyone in the building could connect with anyone else in the building at that street-level connection, and anyone could approach the building and provide service into the building. This would probably relieve some of the difficulties that current franchisees have with negotiating rights of way in individual properties. The last thing I'll touch upon is public resources and the franchise fibers. Every franchise agreement that involved the running of fiber optic cable in the street, the franchisee was required to run a certain percentage of fibers at the city's request, between locations of the city's request. I've issued a Freedom of Information request to see, first of all, that the franchisees have been in compliance with their individual franchise agreements. Secondly, to see what the utilization is of this pre-existing network. By some sources, I've heard that less than 40% of the fibers are lit. This could be, I'm not certain. I don't know. I'd like to know what's available and at what points the community can make use of that resource that that we own.
Thank you, Mr. Clever, for this very thoughtful testimony. I'm sure that even in the last speaking position, you may find that you have questions today.
It's an interesting proposal. I'm sure there's numerous legal hurdles to a lot of it, but this should be discussed. I can definitely say someone has tried to build community networks in the city. And found that the best strategy was to work with anyone other than the city, to work with business improvement districts, to work with parks conservancies or other neighborhood level quasi-governmental groups. That I think a lot of the franchise laws are definitely geared towards creating a bar that keeps a lot of small businesses and certainly community-based efforts from competing. And I think about the parks department's Wi-Fi franchise from a couple of years ago, which ended up basically selecting a startup that was venture funded, had no real business plan, and now is defunct. And all those parks now have Wi-Fi that's dark. NYC Wireless at the time wanted to participate in that, but there were a number of insurance, indemnity, and other kinds of hurdles that effectively excluded us, even though we have probably the best proven track record of building public Wi-Fi in the city. So, I mean, NYC Wireless is now the last man standing and still operating networks throughout the city. So, you know, we sort of won that one. But I like that. You know, I like the philosophy of this, which is that this technology is easy, and people have said the technology solutions are there. It's creating business models and, you know, telling people that it's there, getting them engaged in using it, and community-based efforts are clearly the best way to do that. So I think there's some really good points here that we should take to heart.
Other questions or comments?
Just so you're aware, we did issue our last RFP for a citywide build-out, and the city's intention there was to bring true cable competition across the city and not leave any community out. So with Verizon looking to come into the market, that RFP was very much geared towards forcing anyone who wanted to come in to build out to the entire city. Our intention now, we're currently renegotiating, or we're in renewal negotiations with Time Warner and Cablevision. They're the former incumbent monopoly providers. Once we wrap those up, our intention is to release an RFP that would allow smaller entrants to come in and fill niche markets throughout the city. One example of a company that already provides service, though not under a franchise, but to a limited portion of the city, is RCN Communications. They provide essentially cable service to parts of Manhattan and have for many years under an open video systems agreement. So our intention is to allow groups like RCN to enter through what would now be a franchise process similar to what we've done with the bigger providers. It would again provide for limited builds within boroughs. It wouldn't require an overbuild or a build of an entire borough.
Okay. Are you able to comment on the state of the FOIL request?
Yeah, actually, this is the first I'm seeing of it. I can go back and speak to our general counsel's office who would have this request, find out where that is. Actually, on the INET question, I can tell you that I'm not aware of how much we use, but that institutional network does provide our public safety agencies with the ability to communicate across the city. So it does serve a very valuable purpose for the city. And we are actually, you know, our former providers, Time Warner Cablevision, helped us build the original core of that network. What we're doing with Verizon and the INET agreements that we've received through Verizon is we're making that network fully reliable and redundant so that our public safety grade communications can run even more. You know,
yeah, there's a secondary wireless network that was built for security purposes at a cost of $500 million.
That NiceWin network that you're referring to is separate entirely from INET. It's actually not exclusively a public safety network. That network is being built so that all city agencies, essentially public safety and public service agencies, all of their mobile and wireless applications can run on that network.
Okay. In 2007, there was a $500 million contract for voice and data.
If I could actually stop you there, I would like to make sure that there are all questions have been asked from the committee members before continuing the questions in the other direction.
I just have one other question. Is this based on precedents from other cities that have employed similar schemes, or what are the origins of this idea?
There's a project in Ottawa that was the first attempt, the first pilot project. I think Utopia has a slightly similar. There's no financial incentive to this. No one makes any money. Everyone has great access, but it's merely self-sustaining. So the amount of, say, research it takes to determine what the rights of way are and the various hurdles in place between there's no financial incentive to do that. But then again, the water company isn't monetized and the fire department doesn't produce a profit. So there's precedent for systems that don't generate a profit to be ultimately the best way of providing the service.
Anyone else? Tom? Could you tell us about your organization, the Community Fiber Project?
Sure.
I see your front, the address is New York, New York.
Yes.
You missed the hearing that you had in Manhattan?
No, I've been to three of the
Five?
So.
But just tell us, I'd like to know more about your organization.
Well, it's a grassroots, organization.
Is it just city, New York City, or five boroughs? Or?
It's mostly New York City. I mean, the people who are actively working on it are New York City. We have people from other cities. There's someone from Amsterdam, which has been very successful with this open fiber infrastructure model. There are people involved outside of New York City who've had previous experience. For the most part, people who are actively engaged in attempting to push this forward are New York City residents.
And it's a not-for-profit?
Yes.
And how do you get your funding?
We do it it's a passion project.
Passion project?
How do we get our funding?
Yeah.
We don't currently require any funding because we're not incurring any direct expenses. The labor expended researching this and filing FOIL requests is volunteer effort. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Clever, thanks very much.
And Vinny, you care to elaborate as long as you're talking about doing proposals vis-a-vis the stimulus package?
Sure, that would be great. Essentially, as far as we know it, we're now tracking the what's I guess called the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act very, very closely in terms of broadband funds. Of the $4.7 billion that is being allotted for what they're calling Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, at a minimum of $250 million are dedicated directly to encourage sustainable adoption of broadband services. That, I think, falls very much in line with what we've really been discussing over the course of the last year and a half to 2 years. The city is very much interested in applying for grant monies for these purposes to I think the hope here is, and it sort of comes out of the work that we've done, to bring both hardware, training, and internet service into low-income households and low-income communities. A real key element of adoption, as we've, I think, learned throughout this process, is training. It's getting people the education that they need to understand the value in having broadband service in the home. So that's a really key component, and I think that's something we want to focus on. In addition to that, there's a minimum of $200 million, which is going to be dedicated to expand public access centers. So we've heard a lot about the libraries, community colleges, high schools, and other public facilities that provide internet access through public access centers. This is a great opportunity for all of those organizations, as well as the city, to put out proposals. There is a matching contribution that a municipality or a not-for-profit would have to put up in order to be eligible for this. But I think it's a 1 in 5. There's a significant amount of money that you can get from the government if you have what could be a fairly minimal investment. And so in those two areas, I know, on DeWitt's behalf, the city is actively pursuing funding through both of those sources for programs directly tied to the work that's being done here. And I, certainly for the not-for-profits that have been here, it's something that every not-for-profit should view as an opportunity at this point to engage in, because I think, this is a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-million-years opportunity. It's very unlikely you're going to see monies like this become available from the federal government anytime soon. So it's something we all want to take advantage of.
Thank you. Do any of my colleagues have any concluding remarks?
Finally, I'd like to thank everyone for coming out today and participating. It's been, for us, certainly an educational process. And as always, I think it's very valuable to get as much information from the public as possible. And I think today's been very insightful. And as always, the committee's charge is to take everything we've gathered here and at all the other public hearings and sort of really push the envelope. And I think although the economic times have changed, we're still presented with a unique opportunity to move forward and hopefully take advantage of the funding that is available and to really have New York City establish both a clear strategy around broadband and also really empowering those who are in the underserved areas. So on behalf of the committee, I'd like to thank everyone once again. It's certainly been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And may you all give us one.
long and as well as B. Victor. Thank you.